We dial up Mike and get no one on it.
Recorder is on.
Directional.
Calling someone's extension.
I didn't dial 9 first. Pretty standard.
You got the legislative comments following agenda.
Ring.
You need some help back?
Yeah, I guess I do.
Third time's a charm, actually.
I might have wrote it down wrong. I've been known to do that. Or I might just be dialing sideways.
His boss is coming.
No, it's not coming up.
As long as he's in a deposition.
He's doing a deposition today?
Actually, Kelly can talk about that. Doing a deposition.
Yeah.
Did you dial 1?
Yeah, I did.
No, oh, okay.
Wrote down the number. We're dialing off. We'll get back.
Go ahead and dial. We have one line that comes back.
I would have.
Exactly. Oh, you printed out the 1 sec center. Man, wasting paper, man.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. You printed out this, Axel. Yeah, I printed out copies for everybody because I was like, oh, that was a good
one. Oh, you did?
Yeah, the 1 sec that you got us. But anyway. Don't worry about it.
Well, it's his fault. So I'll just call him on his regular line.
360.
223-3020.
On our zoning permit, that was good for 60 days.
Which?
Or 9 months, or 60 days, or 90 days.
I'm just telling you. That's why you got to count him in.
Oh,
for
dialing.
Hello, it's Mike.
Michael!
Hey, Mike.
Hello. Hi.
Hey, so Mike, I tried you on that other number, but it was bad.
Oh, okay, that's okay. We can use this.
Okay, sorry, it didn't work.
That's all right.
In the room are the commissioners, myself, Axel, Mary Keltz, Kelly Seals, and Eric Hidla from the Columbian. The floor is yours. Okay. Everybody has a copy.
Okay, you have a couple items in front of you. Let's start with the agenda. I'm going to add an item. When I was putting it together this morning, I thought I put transportation budget on it and just realized I didn't. So we're certainly going to talk about that as well. So it was only left off because I hit delete and thought I'd put it back on.
Okay.
Start from a session recap position or point of view where we're at. We've got, what do we got? A couple, 2.5 weeks to go essentially. Today was a big day in the sense that the House released its operating budget proposal and following the Senate that did it a week before. As I was sitting here, I was going through the House proposal. It came out at noon, but I was in a meeting till about 1 o'clock, so I've just come back to my place and started to flip through it, so I can't give you an accurate accounting of what is in the House budget yet. I've taken some preliminary looks that we'll go through here in a minute. Where this goes from here is the House will hear the budget today. We'll do an executive session tomorrow. And then work to pass it off the floor on Friday or Saturday, depending if the minority party gives them the bump, as it were called. When you amend the budget, it has to sit on the bar for 24 hours before it can be passed off the floor unless the minority party gives them the bump to do so. I don't know if that's going to end up happening or not. But needless to say, the House budget will pass off the floor later this week, given that the Senate's passed last week. Transitioning to the operating budget as it pertains to counties, that's the other sheet you have there, or the other three-page document that you have there. This is Senate Chair Budget Proposal. It's an Association of Counties document. It does a pretty good job of summarizing what the county impact is within the operating budget. You will remember we have talked several times about the worry of shared revenues being taken away from the counties. And local government in general. On balance, that did not happen in the Senate budget. As I have flipped through the House budget so far, I don't think it happened there either. But it's too early for me to tell because, again, I haven't read through it. I haven't read all the way through it yet.
All right, and we did get those letters out, Mike. We got the letters out to our delegation at the beginning of this week, so they should have them just from our county electeds.
Okay, perfect. So that's good news. And, in fact, you'll remember the legislature cut some of your shared revenues, I think like 3.4%, I want to say, last year. You're getting all that back, and as I understand it, plus a little bit more. The one drawback in the Senate budget, and Commissioner Stewart, this hits home with your position on the Public Works Board, the Senate, in order to fund its budget without a general revenue increase, swept or diverted some of the funding source for the Public Works Trust Fund, essentially two-thirds of it, that being the portion of the REIT that would go into the Public Works Trust Fund, the litter tax, and the utility tax portion. I believe that's correct. The taxes that flow into that, Commissioner Stewart, but I do know it's two-thirds of it.
No, you're right on, and it's something that it's not just a one-time sweep like the legislature has done in the past. It sets it up as a permanent fund transfer for the purposes of helping to fund the education gap they have under McCleary. And so not only will we lose funding this year for 10th Avenue, for the 10th Avenue extension, but it will reduce the ability that we have to get state funding through Public Works Assistance Account for that project moving forward, or other projects as well. So.
Exactly right. It will be simply the pot of money the loan out of will be smaller by two-thirds as it go out into the future. And you summarized it. It was from the Senate's, in the Senate's position, it was prioritizing where revenue should go to fund education. You can contrast that quickly with what the House did in looking at their budget. They're assuming about... I'm flipping to the page here so I give you the accurate number. They are assuming about 1.2 to 1.3 billion in new revenue. And that new revenues depends on how you look at it. They do what's called the Bracken case. That's the estate tax. There was a court case. I don't know if it essentially invalidated the estate tax, but made a change to it that the legislature has to make a fix, and if they do that, they can realize $160 million. That's not something that the Senate did. In fact, none of the things I'm mentioning are something that the Senate did. In the House, they're also proposing to extend the three-tenths B&O tax surcharge that was put in place a couple years ago, which generates $534 million in the biennium, extend the beer tax, a travesty, that is worth $60 million in biennium. And then the omnibus tax preferences package. You may remember a couple weeks ago I sent you an email that the governor had put out a proposal, and in his list of tax preferences to remove, one of those was the out-of-state tax exemption, sales tax exemption. I don't know if that is on this list or not. The bill that will lay out these revenue projections, I have not read it yet, and it may not be available. These are just assumptions they're going to make, and they'll throw them in a bill that we'll get a hearing soon. So I will be watching for that. So what this sets up essentially is that the House and Senate will be a ways apart. They'll meet somewhere in the middle. There are some bigger pieces that the House assumed that the Senate didn't, that have somewhat not unanimous support, that's the wrong way to characterize it, but there is support out there for it in terms of a way to come to an agreement to get out of town. But that's not going to happen here in the next day or two. It's obviously going to happen in the next couple, 3 weeks, and most likely into a special session again. So we'll keep you posted on how the budget looks, but again, on the preliminary look, as it pertains specifically to your county operations, it does not look like there was a big sweep of shared revenues, or I think there is a $100 million sweep out of the Public Works Trust Fund in the House version, but not the diversion that the Senate did. So that's kind of where things are. I know that's a little rough over the pretty high view of it. The document again that WASAC sent out is a really a good document, and I would expect their folks right now are banging away and doing comparisons, and I bet you we will see a comparison document from them in the coming days, later today, tomorrow. Specific to the capital budget, transitioning to that document.
Well, hold on, Mike. One thing I'm just noticing on the WASAC thing is that there's kind of, they say in here, they're on natural resource stuff, there's a, this is just something to pay attention to, there's a mixed bag on environmental funding. So there is funding for stormwater permit updates and shorelines management permit updates, but none for Growth Management Act comp plan updates, which is going to be pretty important to us heading into that. So.
We talked about it at WASAC Ledge Steering last week. That was one of the things that I raised with the group, and then in talking with our legislators, our senators, that was one of the things that I raised as a GMA planning county. If you're going to cut the funding for technical assistance, then you need to give us relief from the timeline associated with the update. Our senators who I spoke with were supportive of that. Senator Rivers said that she would look to add an amendment on the floor that ties any lack of funding for the GMA tech assistance with the timelines.
Cool.
So Mike, can you follow up with Senator Rivers about that and make sure that that happens?
I will. Well, you know, the budget has already passed off the floor, and I'd have to go back and review the amendments.
Take a look and see if she followed through on that.
If that got offered or not, but certainly I can talk to her about working that in conference.
Perfect.
Okay. Okay. Transitioning then to the capital budget, I think you'll be happy to see what the Senate approach specifically. Axel will remember about 3-4 weeks ago, I don't know if it was that long ago, we went through a drill of getting, along with Ron, getting a list of capital budget stormwater projects that are going to be funded in the capital budget. As it sits right now in the Senate version, there's $1.53 million directly to Clark County for stormwater projects.
Wow.
There's not a detail beyond that I have found yet. I'm going through the verbiage of the budget. We've had 3 budgets dump out here in the last, 24 hours, so I'm still going through them. But I want to get, right now in the project list, it just says Clark County Stormwater, $1.531
million. Great.
So, I can't imagine. I'm sorry?
So I'm a little suspicious of receiving so much money. How much match do we have to put to it?
Well, that's just it, Commissioner. I'm going through, but at this point, I don't believe there is. And this is a function of Senator Erickson's desire to modify the way MOTCA funds are spent and drive that money straight out to cleanup rather than having, and these are, this would be his argument, rather than having it go through ecology.
Wow.
And there's, so administrative dollars get sucked out. It is a direct distribution. That same approach is not done in the House.
Right. Well, and it seems
so
like
that's clearly going to be a fight to see who prevails on that.
So Mike, like we need to be, I mean, from a Senate, the Senate budget on shared revenues was better for us than either the governor.
You said was good for us?
Yeah, it was good for us. The Senate budget was good for us on shared revenue, which is, 7 figures for us as far as if they were to reduce shared revenues, that would be the reduction that we would see in public health, social services, and other shared revenue, a little bit of public safety. What's good on the capital budget side, so one of the things that we need your help with is as you're going through these budgets, we need to know, like, what are the aspects of the budget that we want to say, hey, thank you, senators, we love what you did here, because that's what I was doing with the other commissioners last week on the general county stuff, but want to be able to do that with the specific Clark County stuff, is saying, hey, we really appreciate what you did with the stormwater funds, with the with shared revenue, those things. Same thing with the House. If there's positives in their budget as they're going to conference, we want to make sure our legislators are fighting for the things we want.
Absolutely, Commissioner. And that's part of the reason I had you bring me up that letter a couple, 3 weeks ago, is I will, as I get through this, and be able to say what's good about each one and what's bad about each one,
cool.
Essentially.
Okay.
And prepare that list, and I will certainly share that with you all before I distribute it out to anybody.
Okay.
Also, in the Senate budget, the Children's Center was funded.
Yeah.
And I've not seen it in the House budget yet, but again, I'm going through the project list, and they always, it's a frustrating deal. They list them differently in the House and Senate list, so you can't just go cross page to do it. And so it's possible it's in there, and I just haven't found it yet.
Yeah, keep looking, because Stonier was pretty sure that was the one thing she was really pushing for,
as a get in the capital budget, and she was pretty sure she was going to get it. So
yes, Commissioner, you're correct, and I have been in contact with her so far. I'm just having her back from her to double check.
You're the one who set up the meeting. You were in it. Sorry. Yeah.
If I just wasn't looking in the right place.
Okay.
As part of the operating budget in the Senate, there was a sweep of $15 million of E911 money. You probably all have received emails from your E911 folks.
Mm-hmm.
I know Bill had asked me about it specifically. I have an answer for what has happened with this. The money for E911 goes through the military department. The military department put in a request for $12 million in E911 infrastructure programs, whatever it is that they're going to do with those monies. The Senate budget funded it at $8 million, granted their request. Of the $12 million, gave them $8 million of their request, and said that the other $4 million was a little fuzzy on what exactly it was specifically going to go to, so the $8 million is the number they got rather than the extra $4 million. When that happened, that would have left, and it's not proper to say a fund balance, but it would have left $15 million additional dollars on the table. The legislature on the Senate side swept that money back into its general fund. The reason they did that was, again, go back to the military department's request was for 12, they got 8, and that's all they had asked for. The E911 folks would tell you that they would find a way to spend that $15 million on the next generation, on the enhancement as we move forward of this public safety equipment. There's a disconnect there, though, because the legislature, from my point of view, from my take, doesn't have enough detail to leave that $15 million in. I have not looked in the House budget close enough yet to see whether or not the $15 million sweep occurred there as well. But the problem is I would liken it to if your building department came to you and said, hey, you know, our budget request is $4.2 million, but leave us this other $800,000 in the bank, and we'll find a good way to spend it. We'll spend it on good stuff, but we just don't exactly know what yet.
Yeah, that's a good
Well, with budget riders, you're probably not going to give them the money.
Yeah.
and that's essentially, that's probably an oversimplification of what happened, but that's the way I've used that analogy with folks, and they have agreed that that is exactly what happened. So there was a disconnect between what they could do with that extra $15 million. So I just wanted to answer the flow on I assume you're seeing some of this email traffic going back and forth. It's a pretty impressive email tree these folks have going. They're a good grassroots group, the way they're contacting folks, and they're doing it through county sheriffs. So you may have heard about it through your sheriff, and I'm assuming, Bill, that's where you heard it from.
Correct.
So that's the explanation of it. It's a tough box that they're in because they're asking for the money, and there's not a lot of detail as to how exactly they were going to spend it. And when you're in a budget situation that the legislature faces, they're going to sweep anything that's just left over, especially if there's no good reason to spend it. So I know that's not a lot of hope to say that we're going to get the $15 million back, because frankly, I'm not confident that's going to happen. Again, though, I need to read through the House budget to see if they made the same sweep.
Okay.
So, Bill, I hope that answers the question. Does that clarify everything for you, or do you need more from me on that?
No, it's fine.
Okay. Next I have the capital budget. I already jumped through that. Apologize that I kind of got ahead of myself there. The next item is this Senate Bill 5887. This is a bill that was introduced by Senator Rivers and a couple other Senate members a couple days ago, or late March, I guess, dealing with the cannabis issue.
You want me to talk about it, Mike? I talked with Brian Enzlo at WASAC quite a bit about it yesterday. Just kind of what
okay, I have a. I got in touch with Senator Rivers' office
okay.
too to get their take on it. So why don't you go ahead, then I'll offer up if I have anything to add to it.
So the background and why it matters to us is you all remember we're in the middle of our moratorium, which is going to expire on collective gardens. That's the medical cannabis side. It's not the 502 recreational side. And so what this bill does is attempts to bring back some of the ideas and concepts that the governor vetoed from Senate Bill 5073, which is the bill that eventually gave us the collective gardens. The three major changes that this would do to what we currently have on the books is it would basically, it syncs up rulemaking through the Liquor Control Board for medical cannabis for the same time period that recreational rulemaking is going on. So that's kind of one of the concepts is, hey, we're making rules right now for recreational marijuana. Why don't we make some rules and standardize the process for medical cannabis across the state at the same time? The other thing is it redefines collective gardens, basically closing the loophole. You'll remember right now they're using collective gardens as these storefront dispensaries for medical cannabis around the state because they have no real cap on how many people can utilize them each day. You can change members all the time. So it says 10 per day, which really would significantly change the definition and basically close that loophole. And then the other one, it says that localities can't ban the use. So once Liquor Control Board sets up the rules and the structure, I think the give there then is that you can't preclude it. You do have to cite these distribution, production, and retail centers for medical cannabis once the Liquor Control Board establishes rules. So long story short, it tries to bring back some of the original legislation for medical cannabis, sync it up with where recreational use is going through the Liquor Control Board. And, I mean, my opinion would be, and I talked to Brian about this yesterday, I don't know how WASAC is going to feel about it or how you guys will talk about it at LSC, but I would be supportive of it just from the standpoint that it would really clarify what it is we're trying to do or what's going on with medical cannabis right now. There's all kinds of jurisdictions around the state utilizing different approaches. Moratorium, some of them are doing nothing, some of them are doing limited zoning. A lot of them are in this, you know, situation where they don't know what to do because of the federal government. So, to me, I like it because if it did pass, it would at least clarify that the state's going to take the lead on the medical side in terms of the process as well, and we would get some clear direction on what the standard practice for medical cannabis is going to be around the state as opposed to this sort of patchwork process that's going on right now. So, that's my take.
In the broader sense, too, there's some tax implications in this, and that's part of the legislative interest in terms of, if I understand it right, the 502 stuff, if you just go in and buy it at a store recreationally, it'll be taxed, whereas the medical stuff is not.
That's right. There's no structure to tax medical cannabis now.
This would address that, and also I was told there are some age issues in who can and cannot access a medical garden.
Yeah, that's right. So for recreational, you'll have to be 21. Right now, you can be a child and get prescribed medical marijuana as a prescription at any age, I guess.
I'm confused a little bit. So collective gardens were not commercial dispensaries. They were collectives of individuals who aren't paying for their medicine. They're participating as part of a collective to grow it. So what are you taxing on that? You know, how would you be taxing the medical marijuana? Because the medical marijuana, they can grow their own. The recreational, they can't.
And that's... Well, so that's the thing is right now there is no... Because they're using this loophole that's quasi-legal, there is really no function to tax them. This would set it up the rules for production, distribution, and sale of medical cannabis through the Liquor Control Board it would only tax 25% at sale. So the other one has a three-tiered tax scheme at each step. This would just tax 25% at retail sale for medical cannabis.
So if you had to buy your medical marijuana, then you would get taxed on that.
That's right.
But it wouldn't so you wouldn't be taxing the collective gardens or the people. Okay.
No.
It still seems confusing to me. But.
It is. It's two schemes.
Commissioners, where I left it with Senator Rivers' office was that they're aware of the collective garden issue and Clark County's involvement is the right word, however, but just your activity in that area. And where I left it was, well, let us go through the bill, let us take a look, and if we've got some suggested language changes, you know, will you work with us to do that? I was assured that, yes, they'll listen to us at a minimum. So I guess actually the question for you all, if the board directs that, if we do have concerns, let's get them to her. I'm also told, though, I don't know how likely it is that bill's going to even get a hearing. It doesn't even have a hearing scheduled yet.
And Brian felt that way, too. And so I'll do that. I'm supposed to be working on our questions and concerns about that bill and getting them to Brian Enslow anyway. So I'll be working on that this week.
Okay, so just make sure you CC me, anything you send him, and we'll keep an eye out to see whether or not it's actually going to get a hearing. Yeah.
And also what we like about it. Like I said, at first read, I liked it because I think it would be nice to have some standardization for how we're doing this across the state. But.
All right. So you guys will figure out whether it's got legs and what's going on with that. Come back to us.
Yep.
Cool. All right, Nick.
Okay, and then the last item, the transportation budgets. You all are aware that they're out there floating around, and this is the bare bones version of it. This is not a new package. I'll address the possibility of a new package here in after I talk about the bare bones process. The bare bones budgets, the House has passed its version out of committee. It has not made it to the, or be considered on the floor here in the coming days. The Senate committee still has not passed its version out. They have been scheduled to have an executive session the last, 3 days, and it has never come up. And they have canceled their meetings for tomorrow, and I don't believe they meet Friday either. So we'd be looking at the early part of next week before the Senate will take it up again in the Senate committee. There are amendments dealing with the crossing project and putting sideboards on the project in terms of when the money could be used. Some of those, I've been told, center around dealing with the bridge height issue. But nothing's really been posted online yet, so I don't know the specifics of all the amendments. I just hear when I've talked to legislators about it, what they have told me. Also, there's talk of amendment language directing a new EIS. And so these things are floating out there. I wanted to give you just a timeline update of where they are in the process and just what I know about where things stand right now. When it comes to the potential for a bigger, larger funding package, the House Chair, Transportation Chair Judy Cliburn, has made it clear that she intends to release another package. You will remember months ago she released one that had a variety of funding sources in it, late fees, some taxes that went after some of the oil company folks, barrel taxes, things like that, and the gas tax. She has indicated that she is going to release a pared-down version here maybe by the end of this week that relies on gas tax and wait fees. And on that, there will be four mega projects, as they're referred to, that will be funded, and one of those will be the Columbia River Crossing project. So we'll look to see that released here later this week or early next week.
Mike, are you engaging in, are you free to engage in lobbying regarding anything regarding the CRC project, since you also are lobbying for C-TRAN?
Yes, Commissioner. I have addressed that with the conflict I have with C-TRAN by retaining, diverting that issue off to someone else. So I am free and at your direction.
In other words, if we ask you to oppose that project or that bill that you just mentioned, that would specifically direct new gas taxes to the CRC project, you could oppose that? You're free to do that?
If that's the board's desire, absolutely. I would caution you, Commissioner, caution/counsel that if we're going to do that, that opposition is directed at the project itself, not maybe the entire budget, because again, there's other projects in there that other folks care about, and so we want to be specific about the whichever project it is or whichever portion of that budget we are in disagreement with.
Right.
But if that is the board's desire, then absolutely.
I think the gas tax would jeopardize other projects, not just the CRC project. So therefore, I would be concerned about the other projects more so, or equally so, and that we might oppose a gas tax. Whether it adds CRC in it or not.
Commissioners, to understand too, there will be portions of that budget that there will be, as I understand it, there will be direct distributions to local government. I guess direct is the wrong word. Probably going to CRAB and TIB for other funding opportunities for you all to go, use for local M&O dollars. So there's going to be some of that as well. So I think we need to be mindful of which portions we oppose. And I understand where you're coming from, Commissioner Mielke. It's within your purview. I just want you to have the whole picture when we're talking about it.
So just
and as far as the CRC, so you're talking about two different things. Well, it's one thing, and that's one bill that will be coming out later. But as far as the different pieces, one of them is specifically going after funding, potential funding for Columbia River Crossing. One of them is an opposition to the gas tax. Are you good with the specific going after, you know, removing funding for CRC?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you got so you got direction from the board to do that. Am I giving direction? All right, we're giving direction to do that work. Now, on the gas tax side of it, I actually kind of, I will make some of my friends mad with this, but I've said it publicly many times that, the gas tax is a diminishing revenue source that is more cost than it is worth for the projects provided, and that they have gotten lots of information about alternative means to fund transportation projects. Yet they keep going to the same, trying to milk the same cow, and the cow's udders are dry. So, so as far as the gas tax as a revenue component, I actually agree with Commissioner Mielke that making it clear that from our perspective, gas tax is a diminishing revenue source, and any gas tax increase means further diversion of revenues across the river, because if we increase our gas tax and it's not increased across the river, that just means more people filling up on the south side of the river, and that means less revenue that we then get. So it, it further diminishes the potential revenue source. So that, I mean, so from my perspective, I'm good with going after the gas tax as a revenue source in a package as well. And so, Commissioner Madore, we, what do you think about like that as far as the gas tax as a revenue source?
The problem I have with it is not with the gas tax. The problem I have is the way they're handling the gas tax. If they have any gas tax, then what they need to do is use that direct revenue for projects. So the reason that two-thirds of our every dollar is going for debt service now is because they just simply run to the bank, borrow everything up front, and blow it, and we end up with nothing but debt service thereafter. That's the problem I have with the gas tax. So I would say if they do anything with gas tax, it has to be with a provision that it does not incur new debt.
See, and now we got like three different opinions on the gas tax, which is probably why you were counseling us, like that the gas tax is a more complex subject, because I don't disagree with anything that anybody said, but it's also, and then it makes me start thinking about, well, okay, then if we're increasing the gas tax directly for projects, how are they going to do allocation of that? And yeah, there's... It is more complex than that. Maybe we stay focused on the CRC.
Yes.
For now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got guidance to go after the new revenue bill. Now you would ask the question about kind of, is he free to lobby on CRC? Are there other aspects of that?
There are, and I'd like to bring that up now. Mm-hmm. I've been in contact with Brian Minnick.
His name sounds really familiar.
He's a registered lobbyist up there.
Oh, he was. Not to interrupt, sorry, I just remember. So Brian Minnick was a lobbyist when I was a lobbyist up there. He was with BIAW.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And right now, the Senate is in a position to submit amendments regarding this CRC project. And here's what I propose. I propose that we sign up Brian Minnick to lobby against... since taking any more money and funneling it to the CRC project at all, unless there's two conditions, and if these both conditions have been met, then let the system work the way it's supposed to work. The first condition would be that the Coast Guard would have to issue a permit that says, yeah, you can build what you have proposed. That's reasonable. The second condition is that we have a countywide vote in the primary, and this is our authoring, that when we do that on this project, as close as we can get, so that the intent of this vote is to indicate whether or not the people throughout the countywide here would either oppose or support that project. If the people support that project in that countywide vote, then it says, okay, you release the other enabler. So that amendment really would be for those two conditions before any more money flows into it. The advantage that it gives us, first of all, is that the CRC office has plenty of money still in their account. And Oregon still owes them like $17 or $18 million more. That was a condition of releasing the first $25 million that Mueller supported. So They're not going to dry up between now and then. They'll have plenty of funds. The second one is that those proponents that are speaking for this, the proponents for this project, keep telling everybody, including the legislature up there, that the majority of the people support this project. So they ought to be able to go for this middle ground. If they really believe what they're telling people, that the majority of the people support this, then they would be the first one to say, absolutely, we think you ought to do that.
You're confused me. First of all, if we decide to do that, I'm reluctant to hire another lobbyist because we already have one. And then, as far as the vote, that's got nothing to do with the state. That's a decision that we're going to make. So I'm not quite sure.
Well, let me separate them out. Right, the state has nothing to do with them making the vote happen. That is completely our decision. And so we, as the county commissioners, would say we will have a countywide vote regarding this project. And that will indicate an up or down for the community.
But we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about...
Well,
Sandy wants one of the conditions to be that. How would
exactly,
how do you create that condition for the legislature if it's something that we as a board do?
We would communicate to the Senate that we have agreed to put this on our ballot, and then they can connect it as an enabler on their side. This is Clark County has already decided.
You're asking them to honor the vote of the people in the primary.
What you're okay?
Yes, respect that. And both sides should go for that because both sides are saying, well, the majority of the people.
I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with hiring another lobbyist.
Well, I can tell you the specifics on that. The cost, I already checked into it. The cost is $6,000 to get the job done. And Mike, you already know Brian. You want to share any insight on this? The question is, would it make sense for us to have a Brian, since you're already there, lobbying for the county?
And that's the question. So, Mike, the question isn't so much about Brian individually. The question is, do you, as our lobbyist, do you have latitude to be able to work an amendment? To say again? The freedom. Yeah, do you have the freedom to work an amendment for us, or do you feel like we would need additional resources?
Commissioner, I feel like I have the freedom to do that. I can't make hiring and firing decisions. You know, that's not something I can do.
No, we're just asking your opinion on your freedom to be able to do the work, though, and whether you think too much work for one lobbyist.
I absolutely feel like if you direct me to go in that direction, I will go. I serve at your pleasure.
So what I guess we would be asking you then would be to go to one of the legislators or one in the House and one in the Senate and promote the amendment.
It absolutely can do that. And I think there are some of that, the amendments that Commissioner Madore suggested, are already, portions of that are probably already in place. I know specifically on the bridge height issue, or the Coast Guard permit. When I mentioned it earlier, I said bridge height issue. That's the Coast Guard permitting issue. I know that one is. I'm not sure about the public vote. My gut reaction on the public vote is, I wonder if there are legal issues involved in that. Can you do it?
We can check into it. I researched it time or two ago. There, on mega projects like this, there's some precedent for it. The Tacoma Narrows Bridge and the viaduct. So, I mean, I can shoot you what I found on that.
Sure. I mean, and what I would need from you all is, you know, I've taken some notes on what you said, but I would need in writing specifically what we want those amendments to say.
So let me take a shot at this. We're going to ask you to promote one of our legislators to write amendment, one that the project won't happen until it meets the requirement, the height requirement, and number two, that the legislators, if they compromise and want to fund it, that they would honor the vote of the Clark County residents, up or down, on the project.
Right. And again, I'd like to see it in writing to me, so I had it Yeah, make sure I didn't miss anything.
We can do that. We actually, it's on our agenda here at this meeting to discuss the specifics of that vote. So we've got two proposals here, and there may be more by the time we're done. To actually provide something to you, so the more specific we can be on this, the better. Yeah. I think the intention is basically we already had a vote, and Tom Mielke is correct, and we already had a vote. The people said no to funding light rail on this project as best they could. It wasn't countywide, and those that are discounting that vote that are going around it are saying we didn't ask the right question. So this basically puts that challenge to rest and say that basically say, okay, this should get the right question and this should be appropriate and the middle ground should that everybody ought to agree. So the idea is to cut off the funding because it's not the best, but if the funding is there for $81 million, at least it needs to be triggered or enabled by something.
So I think what we're being tasked with here, Mike, is to give you something in writing so you understand what we're asking.
Right. I need it clearly from you so I have something to carry to these folks. I mean, I can go right now, after we get off the phone, I can go track down people and I can get an amendment offered.
Yeah.
Again, I need to double check because I think, again, some of this language is already going to be offered.
So you can work on getting them to change the language a little bit to get...
Yeah.
So that's what I need to see. As it pertains to whether or not I can do it, absolutely I can. I mean, I serve at the board, and it's no secret, you know, I also represent CTRAN. But I, when it came to the work that conflicted on this, I've taken care of that issue, and I've mitigated that issue to the best of my ability.
So Mike, as far as the... So we understand the information that you need. Obviously, this is something that you would probably want on a tight turnaround to get that information to you.
Right.
So, today. Do you guys have?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're nodding around the table. The information will come to you by end of today to be able to start working the issue for the board. Is that
great?
Does that solve?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So you got marching orders on that, and we'll get you the information to help. Make sure that you're, you know, successful in your work. And if there are people who we need to contact, and I say we in the imperial sense because I speak as the chair, not for the majority necessarily in this, but if there are people who we as a board need to be contacting for Senate, House, or otherwise, please make sure we get that list of people. And
right.
This board knows that if I get that list, I ain't going to be calling behind them saying...
Oh, you are, too.
So I'm not. I'm calling behind you, these guys saying, don't listen to them.
He's up here supporting our position for a long time.
Yeah.
I see
so,
your signature.
So, Commissioner, the one thing I would say is the next chance for public comments on this, Commissioner Medora, I had spoken with you directly about it over the weekend, that there is value to yours... Or I'm assuming what I'm hearing is that this is coming from Commissioner Mielke and Medore, not being in the room. And because you mentioned, Commissioner Stewart, there's a split board on this. That
I think he supports on those amendments.
I'm saying you have direction from the board. That's what I'm saying. That's all you need to know is you represent the board on this.
Okay, and I represent the board on this.
I'm not worried about myself. You don't need to worry about looking after me, man.
We know.
And so, but when there is another opportunity, I will give you plenty of advance notice, but I think there's value to one of you appearing here before the Senate, the House Transportation Committee, when they discuss the next version of their package.
So the second you know about that, make sure that we as a board know about it so we can make sure someone can come up.
I will do that. Absolutely do that.
Cool.
We'll probably send Stewart up to testify.
They probably will make me go up there and be like, I'm not here of my own free will and volition.
Well, I'd at least use a county car then if I had to come up.
All right. So other questions or direction on transportation? But we got some work to do, obviously, today to get him information. Anything else on transportation side?
No.
All right. Anything else from you, Mike?
No, that's all I needed. The direction's all I need.
Yeah, full speed.
Well, we haven't fully confused you. We'll try again later.
See you, Mike. Well, no, I appreciate it. All right, thanks.
Thanks for all your work, Mike.
Okay, see you. Bye.
On the 10th Avenue project, Did he say that we were still okay?
No, that's what I was saying. So for the Public Works Trust Fund, which is where we were going to get the low interest loan from Public Works Assistance account, the Senate, for sure we don't get it this time around or future times. That's the one I'm worried about. None of the three, the governor's, the House, based on what he was saying, the $100 million sweep, that's what the governor did, or the Senate. None of them we get money this year for 10th, but that's okay.
You're talking about 10th from 179 North.
No, the bridge over Whipple Creek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about two different things.
I'm sorry. No, the bridge over Whipple Creek, that part of it. Because that's between $10 and $15 million we expect to be able to get the Public Works Assistance account. In the Senate version of what they're going to do long-term, I'm very concerned that over the next 10 years, we won't be able to get it. Whereas with the House and the governor's version, it's a one-time sweep of the 100, but it doesn't further encumber or take funds away long-term from Public Works Assistance account. And the Public Works Assistance account, it's local money. It was local money that was developed 35 years ago where legislature and local governments got together and said, hey, look, we'll take real estate excise tax and a couple other kind of local funding sources. We'll roll them up to the state and then that way and create a loan program, this low interest loan program that will always repay itself. And there's never been a default on it. But we'll get infrastructure projects going throughout the state on a prioritization basis. And everybody agreed to it, but then it's a big pot of money that the legislature sees and their eyes get big. So, yeah, and then they go, and they scoop it up. So it's one of those things that you're constantly battling over. And the Senate just says, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and take those revenues that you think are your revenues, and we're going to put them in toward education.
So that would be good. What is they're labeled and titled as what right now?
I'm sorry, what are?
If I call up your...
Oh, it's... So on the Senate's proposal... it's a public works assistance account is what it, and it actually, and it identifies this whole paragraph right here.
Yeah,
is all about the public works assistance account. Okay. Permanent reduction of real estate excise tax, local public utility tax, local solid waste collection tax, also local.
So all of our legislators should be in support of this for us.
They are. I mean, and in talking with them individually, they're like, yeah, absolutely, I totally agree with you, but when push comes to shove and they got a hole to fill and I got my cleary, it's going to be tougher for them to stand up on it.
Okay.
Because on the Senate side, they don't want to raise revenues, and that means they got to find money. And on the House side, they don't want to cut programs, so they're raising them, but they also need some money.
On the other part of the question that I was concerned about, that I thought they were talking about, is a program that you're working with for 179th Street North.
Local revitalization financing.
That is still a lot.
That's just the interchange. It doesn't go north on 10th Avenue because... All we did with that application, even though we have a surrounding district with which the increment would be built, it's not intended to build 10th Avenue. That was the subsequent project to go a little bit east and down to 179th. Huh?
That was going to be all the infrastructure, I thought, on 10th.
Mm-mm. No, because 10th would have to go all the way up to 219th eventually to free up all that urban holding in there. And that project specifically was the interchange with I-5 because that's the bottleneck.
If that's the case, then it's kind of a bad deal because the state's not in it with the interchange. They're not involved in redoing the bridge portion itself.
Right. Exactly. The state's not even putting it on their 20-year list that I'm aware of. And so
we weren't that short.
Well, we do get
short that amount of money. I thought that was a promotion for economic development.
True, but by rebuilding the 179th interchange, then what you do is you free up opportunities regionally in there. And so, for example, the industrial property that I talked with all the commissioners about, where Smith Root is looking to go into the urban urban holding lift area on the back side of WSUV, 179th is critical if you're going to develop all of those properties, the 179th interchange project, for concurrency purposes.
Right.
Plus, it makes a big difference to the amphitheater, of course.
Well, but the program that we were talking about and going for the money was primarily for the economic development portion of the Killian area and the north yeah. east corner of 179th and 10th.
Yep, that's the lift. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that'd be the southeast corner. They're not north of 179th.
He said and the northeast corner. So Killian.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah.
So,
yes, it helps 10. All of that in as much as capacity is concerned, but the project doesn't build any of 10th Avenue, other than just where it interfaces with the interchange.
Okay. I don't remember, I could be wrong, I don't remember dollars being so tight that we would need that on that interchange because of all the options of different ideas that we had to fix it.
For 179?
Yeah.
Oh, no, 179th was so expensive as far as, because remember that part of it was the underpass.
We already removed the underpass.
Well, no, exactly. We save a lot of money there. It's not as cool, but okay. But that, you know, it's the underpass, remember, was still real expensive, and that's part of what we got to get on WashDOT's list. So we can fight, and we can push them to get that on the list, but that's a lot of expense.
That'd be behind our schedule. By the time we got them up and moving and included that in a 10-year program, we hope to have ours done within.
Agreed.
No,
I totally agree. Can we get an update, Bill, please, from Public Works on 179th interchange? Because I know that we do have on the program from the interchange on 179th, from the interchange to 15th, is on the program list.
So what we did was when Killian was dragging their feet and we were short funds for a big project, we said, you know, we're just going to pull that off for a couple of years.
Right.
And then that helped bring Killian back to do the agreement.
But we put a timeline on it because we helped reserve trips for them. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I think also there was a redirection of emphasis to 10th Avenue and crossing Whipple Creek because 179 wasn't going to happen in a short time.
We're green.
We wanted both.
So, yeah, let's get an update on where we're at as far as that. Because, yeah, I'm not sure where we were at.
On the LRF or the
interchange? Well, just the whole project.
That project.
In general, I think that we put out 2 years, and
it's been a bit.
Just so you know, what we've been telling the state is that we're pulling the trigger on the LRF in 2015, which may have to be a new message in the future, but that's what we've been telling them today.
Well, it's 2013, so let's get to work on it and figure out where we're at, okay?
Yeah, and they have done the preliminary design work, I believe.
Perfect. All right, so let's start blazing through the agenda here, because I know that Marty is going to join us and talk about tenant improvements and fee stuff. All right, railroad coordinator.
One final attempt. Commissioner Mendoor to try to satisfy Commissioner Mendoor's concern about this being more economic development. If you remember the announcement,
I
proposed two things. I propose we make a change to the title from railroad coordinator to railroad development manager. And in my opinion, that better reflects economic development attributes of the position. And if you look at the announcement, it has a number of things here where it talks about the job and the sentence that says permitting functions, capital, coordinating regulatory reviews, facilitating activities of the boards, railroad advisory board, pursuing grant funds and track upgrades, program planning, budgeting activities, development of policy procedures, railroad, and pursuing facilitating economic development opportunities, and then continuing that sentence by increasing development of land, assisting landowners and businesses in developing key projects, developing methodologies for assembling larger tracts of land for industrial area, and growing new and expanding existing businesses.
I like that part. I just changed the name
too.
Ahead of it and said railroad employment area manager instead of railroad development, because railroad development implies that it's the development of the railroad, and it's actually the employment area that they'd be managing around the railroad. So that I just kind of, that's just off the top of my head.
What do you have, David?
You got some different.
I like the what you just added.
Yeah, no, well, I had.
That's
oh,
right on target different. What you added.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's still too railroad centric, because we got this. This does not. If you look at this and think, well, I'm going to spend all my time on the railroad, and in fact, the 10th Avenue, the Discovery Corridor, and the other areas needs to be focused on.
Right. The 10th Avenue's in. Remember, we discussed that last time.
We need more help. We need to be able to really hit this with, this needs to include that.
I think that even though that we'll have two people working on economic development and creating jobs, one would be more focused in the 10th and one would be more focused in the railroad, and they could still come together and collaborate and work together.
I agree with that.
But well, they would,
yes, they need to collaborate and work together. Yes. Got oh, that. And that bottom paragraph, great.
Yeah, I agree.
But the railroad can be a specialty that we include inside the job description, but I don't think it belongs in the actual three-letter head title for the position.
And for me, I've heard enough from our folks that there is some railroad expertise necessary
yes.
to be successful in this job, and anybody looking at a job title as they're looking through it, if they're doing a search, doing a Google search or whatever, and they're looking at the titles of something, and they say, well, I have expertise in railroads, so I'm going to use that as one of my search terms. I would want that somewhere in there, because this is, for me, it is focused on this jobs area, this industrial development area. I mean, that it's a huge swath. I mean, and this is a whole different area, and they need to work together, but this is the big area that...
Any place where we got blue.
No, agreed. I totally agree.
Did you have a recommendation for title?
Well, I would substitute the word railroad for economic or job creator or business or...
That's him.
What do you got?
Well,
hold on,
a partner.
Let the commissioners do it.
A fellow champion.
I like railroad is designated. It whether you put it at the beginning or the end or in the middle, I think it has to be there. Because that's what it's about. It's about the railroad corridor. You want to call it railroad corridor. But it's a specific. It's more specific than 10th Avenue. And it's easier to find. I mean, if I just said economic development coordinator, that could be Kelly.
Well, it could be someone without any rail or without the specific expertise to help work with railroad specific industries.
That's the job description.
I'm going to have so and so come out and see you. He's with economic development. It'd be nice if they could, along the railroad lines, if they knew that they could come back out and could be railroad economic developer.
So what do you have?
I like railroad there somewhere. I don't care where, but it's definitely specific and identifies the corridor. And while they both work together, they both have their specialties, him over here, him over there.
So I think we all agree that it should say economic somewhere in it.
Bill, you got something else?
Yeah. Let me explain how this works. This is the announcement for the job. Okay. It's a program coordinator too. Okay, you can make that anything you want to. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying it's a generalist position that you can mold, and we have molded into the railroad coordinator, whoever you want. Just remember, you can have this person if it's not full time on the railroad. If you don't want it full time on the railroad, it can be an economic development manager assist if you wish.
It sure not very clear if we just call the program the two.
No, it won't be advertised. You have to do the announcement the like this. Yeah. See, we put it here, program.
And if someone was to bid for the job, it'd be funny if they got here and all of a sudden they said, "Oh, we're going to put you over here on the railroad tracks." I didn't want that. I'm a real estate guy.
Understood.
I wanted to go over here.
Understood.
Well, there's two parts to this: the title, the job description.
We got the job description. Well, we all agree on that, I think.
I think we're pretty good on the job description. Now it's just like, how do we, what is the title that goes along with the work that we envision? And I think that you have a little broader vision for what you see for this position, certainly than me.
That could be the beginning of the first paragraph. But the thing is, you have to identify for what it is.
I think so.
Well, the railroad is a means, not an end. The means to job opportunities, to business and places of employment. It's one avenue of focus. Because I expect that the bulk of the action is going to be in development of the preparation of the facilitating the lands around the railroad, more than actually spending time on the railroad itself.
I know too much about the railroad and the needs of the railroad. And if you're going to have industries that are actually going to use the railroad, you got to upgrade the rail just like you would for the road or the land. So, I mean, there you need both, is what I guess I'm saying. I mean, I don't disagree with you that they got to do the land, but you got to do the rail improvements too. Otherwise, it's worthless.
So, would mean you're working on the title rail instead of railroad.
Rail employment area manager.
Rail is one of those areas.
Well, it's the area.
It's really business. It's really employment corridor, right?
But the rail employment corridor.
There you go. How about that? Okay. Rail employment corridor manager. Okay. Hey, we got it. All right. Can we talk? Yes, I'm like.
I am good.
You are good.
I am good.
That's why we gave the big.
I put corridor out of there. Can I think you guys can go for it?
That's a broad swath. I like it. Rail employment corridor manager.
That's good because right now I'm doing that stuff, so that's not a good situation. We got to get somebody in here.
All right.
Axle rail.
Put it on the street.
Really.
So we're going on the street, right?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, commissioners. You are right.
All
right.
Back out.
I have one other thing while we're
on that
finalizing
one.
This.
Yeah.
I think top scale is 80, and I think it's too high.
Well, it's a program coordinator classification. It's 4808 a month, so 12 times 4 is 48,000 is the low, and 767 is
the
low.
Program managers make 80,000.
The range goes from there to there. Yeah.
At the peak.
All program managers are during that range.
Yes, sir.
High end is
67.
Giving them the range though gives them the flexibility to say, all right, is someone coming in at the middle of that, or is there a star that you know has got to be closer?
We never hire at the high.
So 67.
You know, when we hire, we don't know who it's going to be.
85.
So until we know who it is, they can start as low as what? 55?
48.
Yeah.
48?
Mm-hmm.
A year.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Per month.
48.
I'm
month.
Talking a year, you're talking a month.
Well, 60. 60 to 80.
60 to 80,000 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I assume this is like a department head. This is something that.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's not a department head, but it's like the way
it's
that
a program
it is.
Manager.
Is that I assume that we will be the ones engaged in the process and making decisions, saying this guy has the right vision and the qualifications, rather than just simply an internal thing.
Usually, for a program manager, we did for the railroad coordinator, we did do an interview process and we gave our preference, but we weren't the only ones.
Right.
We had Bill and we had Mark McCauley doing primary work, and then they brought us a few finalists, and we said, okay, we like these,
and that's fine. I just want to make sure that we're not out of the loop.
I was just concerned because some other people were saying, I need to start up here.
Yeah, don't forget, you guys created this. The commissioners created this, and you had your hand in
me for this.
Cool. Yeah. And I'm blaming you for both of them.
No, that's how it works. All right.
Okay, we're on the street, gentlemen. Thank you.
All right. Yes. No problem. We're getting rid of old business. Invocation guidelines. Bronson is not here. You have, do we have?
Well, the last meeting we were talking about demographics, and I said I'd see what I could find in the way of.
I got the latest one.
Demographic information.
Okay, so what were the unanswered questions that we? Because there were a few unanswered questions, and I don't want to spend a ton of time. We spent a lot of time.
Well, I think the main thing that has come up since then is that Bronson sent his email that I think you all received, where he said that he doesn't recommend using the 501c3, and so I think you need to discuss and determine what you want to do.
Do we have a copy of our resolution? We should have a copy of it. I heard somebody what appeared to be quoting it the other day. And I thought, that's not it, Matt. I'd like people to know what it says.
Bill's grabbing it.
I don't want to open up the door to allow someone to make a mockery of it.
Yes.
Any more than we do the pledge. You know,
right.
It's part of a ceremonial type thing. So if you don't go with the 501c3, what's to say that I'm Chief so and so and I got my own religion, I'm gonna get rid of smoke a little boy. What do you call it when they go in the smoke?
I got you.
You know, I'm the only one in my church. This is the way I worship
at church.
No, this is why
So did any of you guys ask, kind of, because I didn't feed anything back to Bronson, ask her what, you know, if that's not a reasonable limitation, then what might be a defensible limitation to ensure that it isn't, you know, that it is not made a mockery of, or that, you know,
Did you guys feed that back to Bronson at all?
No.
Can we do that? Can we feed that back to Bronson? Because he's smart about this kind of stuff and has case law in front of him. Can we feed that question back to him and say, can you give us a few options of what a reasonable limitation might be that would be defensible on this?
Well, I think it's still, until we get to that point, we still have the authority to recognize someone who we think is...
Agreed. I mean, until we get it figured out, you guys, and then we continue along the path. But
and so the other big question that we got answered by Bronson was that the Lancaster Lancaster decision said that we don't have to worry about a 50-50. That if we
demographic
hold,
split.
Hold the demographics. And so do you have something different demographically than 70%?
I think that what is salient about what Bronson said is...
Oh, it's an amendment to take that out. I got you.
That's just my work copy. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So
it was very open that they didn't really have an exclusionary policy. That was the point he was making, which is why he said he's not recommending a 501c3 filter. Because that would become...
This come from? Is Bronson Potter okay with this?
Yes. He specifically said that he's good with that.
I'm good with that.
But that's not a definitive list. And that's what I was...
This is just a written list of different religions that might be on.
Well, here's what I was thinking in particular. Somebody quoted this wrongfully the other day. They said, here's what it says. It invites clerical and related representatives from all faiths to join with them in presenting an invocation for up to 2 minutes. That's what it says. What they quoted was... faith or lack of faith. And this basically says all faiths. And it doesn't invite skeptics.
It's not the first time or the last that things will be misquoted that you signed off on, man. But
so we are not inviting
you're talking
skeptics.
About Jack?
I didn't have to mention it directly, but yeah.
Here's an official copy.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
So one of the things we can make sure that actually that this is that there's a copy up there, and so that you know you can refer back to it, like at the diocese.
Yes. Yes.
So, Bill, did you hear that?
I'm sorry.
For hearings, can you make sure that we have like whatever amended copy or something at the diocese for our hearings, and so that if somebody's quoting off of it, that we can have that available.
And wherever we have a list or anything like that, we want to keep this attached to it because we need to be able to, because it would be so easy to get this misquoted.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Good point.
Okay.
So I'm reading your chart, and so does your chart. But I'm looking to see for Clark County what demographics we have as Judeo-Christian versus other.
That's where this is as good a breakdown of representation of adherents as you will find for Clark County. It's better than what the Census Bureau puts together. However, it doesn't include what you might call non-traditional churches, and it doesn't include a lot of the more, say, Asian-type religions and whatnot. It's very Judeo-Christian-centric, although it does include Muslim.
Does it include Buddhist?
Yes, so there's one strain of Buddhism, the Mahayana Buddhism.
Where on your chart does it show many Judeo-Christian percentages for Clark County?
It doesn't say Judeo-Christian. That's just a very broad category for religions which stem out of that tradition.
Yeah.
The roll-up is right here in the top box. That's rolling up the information down below. The easy example here is the Wicca group out of Battleground is not included on here. I don't believe they are a 501c3 organization. I couldn't find any information to that effect with the Internal Revenue Service.
Battleground.
But, in your but they are an assembly there, or a covenant or whatnot.
Okay, so
it's
a really low percentage, actually. I'm surprised.
Just saying.
I'm questioning the percent where it says percent population affiliated with religion, only 28.4%.
Again,
doesn't that seem really low?
Only these ones. It isn't including... People will have faiths in all kinds of categories that are non-traditional or not affiliated with a non-profit organization, so it's higher than that in terms of that total,
so
but in terms of the
concern,
traditional.
My concern is this is a demographic list that only represents actually 28% of the population, which is not even close to a demographic majority. So without including whatever it's, I mean, it, again, the numbers that you hear are that it's over 50% Judeo-Christian, on average, in that it's, that there's in the state of Washington 25% unaffiliated or atheist, and then the rest are, other religious. So I don't know. I mean,
again,
it just seems really
low.
This
is as good as it gets in terms of this information. And I didn't hand it out, but I also did this for 2000 for comparative purposes to see their dramatic differences. And it was roughly the same percent.
Is this on the census?
If you were to go and look up and separate, because what my understanding was, the concern was that there's many, many religions, but they're all Judeo-Christian. And that is one lump group.
Correct.
And so we have to compare that with the other lump sum.
And this is a preponderance.
Yeah, and so this isn't. This doesn't really help me for what I want to know.
I think what the key word, the term we're looking at missing here is faith-based. Because of the faith-based community, you have different percentages. That's a smaller pie than the 100% of everybody in Clark County. So faith-based is a subset. And so the 28% is basically, sounds like it represents the faith base.
Like only 28% represented within the faith based community?
The idea is to invite a diversity within the faith based community to come participate within, like they would.
How you identify the faith base?
Well, that's this.
And that's what this is.
That's what this is.
But.
Yeah, but one thing I noticed in here, that Orthodox, that meant it's supposed to be Orthodox Jew.
I would assume so.
We have a brand new synagogue out there.
Just Orthodox.
Orthodox Jewish, I think, is a separate category on the details that are following.
Is it in here?
My assumption is that Orthodox refers more to Romanian Orthodox or Russian Orthodox or something like that.
Separate. I would think we would certainly want to include the Jewish community.
Yeah, Judaism isn't called out as an actual category. Why is that?
We should.
There's Orthodox Judaism somewhere.
Yeah, but I mean under general categories,
it basically make sure they're well represented.
Because looking at the general categories, it's if the Orthodox is just another sect of,
here it is. It's on the last page. Orthodox
Judeo-Christian.
Where
is
it? We're at
60. And then
Orthodox Judaism, so that's 60 plus.
And then I think it's called Reformed Judaism
or
something
Judaism.
Like that.
That's one of those two, right?
That's just a subsection. The Orthodox.
And then the Reformed Judaism is on the third page, about two thirds up from the bottom. That's about another 300.
And that's the new synagogue.
Third page or second page?
The third page, the right before the end, about two thirds up says Reformed Judaism.
Those who are not Orthodox.
I think we can be.
But aren't they Judeo-Christian?
We can try to be so scientific about this and so mathematical about it.
I think that's what we have to look at. The Judeo-Christians basically believes in
the Bible. Either Old Testament or New Testament or just Old Testament.
They believe in Jesus Christ and Mary.
The Jewish community doesn't believe that Christ
is a prophet. Testament.
They believe that he was a prophet, but that he was not the Son of God.
The Judeo part.
Yeah. Catholics believe in the
Jewish. Yeah, that's what I was.
You were thinking Catholic. Yeah.
And then a Mormon is still considered to be Judeo-Christian too, right?
They believe in the Book of Mormon, and so they also believe in the Bible. So they have they have an add-on basically.
So the resolution says all faiths, and therefore, has Bronson answered the question yet?
Well,
I mean, it seems the simple question that Bronson should answer is there anyone we can exclude? I mean, our resolution says all faiths. The simple question is just to say, can you legally exclude anyone?
Yeah, we're not trying to exclude anybody, except if they're a faith versus a skeptic or a non-faith or somebody who is a militant anti-theist. They don't fit into the faith category.
I get that, but
so can you? So that's why I was, I guess, suggesting instead of trying to go through this overly scientific thing, yeah. is just ask that yep. of Bronson.
Yep. Is it legal to exclude someone?
No, not your question. It's his question.
Repeat what you said.
The question I have is, what can we use as a reasonable filter? Is that the question?
Well, rather than see what we can exclude, I think the resolution speaks for itself. Representatives from all faiths, and what is not what we're not saying there, and skeptics.
So basically, the definition of faith, to, you know, that
faith-based community.
Yeah,
so that's been defined at the national level.
Exactly.
What
so that's
that,
what we
what
need
is
from
that definition.
There you go.
So define faith probably really broad.
Faith-based, exactly.
Well,
so,
that's it. Also, okay.
Well, defining terms is what you do in a resolution, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you got to do is define the terms.
Do you want that for your record? Or you
yeah, because we're gonna
get another one.
Oh, which one?
Well, there's got to be a clear definition.
This?
I mean, that
the federal level, we use the 501c3 as a potential, but there's got
to
be a federal definition. I agree.
We ought to find out what that is.
All right, so we're going to get the federal definition on that from Bronson, and we'll come back with that.
All right,
next we have freeholder resolution. There's research underway. Do you want to give us an update?
Nothing really. Update, just research going on. I'll be honest with you, some of these initiatives are kind of interesting. Like, to prohibit genetically based foods.
What's more important is
nuclear free zone.
They fail. It's more important that they fail.
Well,
so you have faith in the
these are ones that
voters
pass.
Out there because they put them down.
Anyway, research is ongoing.
Regardless of whether they failed or not, if they made it to the ballot and actually ended up in an election, that qualifies because we all have different demographics. That's really so to get
and
a
that's
copy
what I'm asking
of each one of those ballot measures.
Oh, you want a copy of them?
Of the ballot measure? Yeah, ballot measure.
Or at least,
fairly
yeah,
simple
the ballot language
short.
Or something, like the paragraph.
Just go back
something.
To the source of it and put a link to the source.
So whatever
the,
you can get.
I'm getting the ballot question. I haven't done the entire...
Yeah, ballot question.
Some of those
ballot
might question. Be right.
I can come, okay. I don't yeah. think that the WASAC would be able to do that homework for
yeah, us. They have some of that.
How many signatures do they need to have it on the ballot?
Depends on the chart.
Depends on the chart. Right. It's different for each chart. Some have a really high threshold, some have a pretty low threshold.
Some might have a percentage, like 15% of the last gubernatorial election
and
vote,
kind of
or it could be a flat number
so
like 300.
When you say 15% of people that voted in the last election, so that could be 500 people.
And we ought to, it goes out
to the ballot. And 200,000 people have a chance to vote, so it goes down by 80%.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid of the 20% that got on the ballot, and that's what you're saying.
There should be an
you're
electronic
because it got on the ballot.
Folder for all this information, so that we can just throw it in there with your links and all, so instead of just the paper.
That's a great idea. And so instead of handing us a bunch of paper, can you create an electronic folder that we can then access, whether it's G Drive or otherwise, and so that we can kind of, as you're updating the information, that we can be taking a look? That's a great idea. We should do that with a lot more of the things that we do. That's a great call.
So I haven't been requesting the actual ballot measures.
Why
like, you know, I mean, just getting the titles.
I would rather have a list of all the things that passed.
Well, I'm trying to get the
outcomes. If it made it to the ballot, we also have to look at the outcome.
If it was verified by the auditor as qualifying for the ballot, that's the question.
Okay.
Show those to me.
So any further questions?
And the outcome.
To me, it's not
and the outcome.
Yeah,
outcome.
And we should also get a copy of the 6 charters that are out there.
Yeah, and we have that.
I can put those.
Put them on. Perfect. I like the idea of having like kind of an accessible folder for us.
It's like you're being concerned or afraid because someone got enough signatures to put something on a ballot that failed dramatically.
Well,
but
the outcome would show that.
So speaking of putting things on the ballot,
put it on there.
Speaking of putting things on the ballot, next thing we have then is CRC ballot measures and election timeframes. Do you like that segue? Mm-hmm. Roll right into it. All right. So you just handed us out something, Commissioner Madore.
Yes.
Is this potential language? Is that?
Yes. I passed this to Bronson Potter on Monday, and he's been busy, so he hasn't got back with me on it.
Okay.
You saw the original suggestion that he gave to us. It was similar. What I'm trying to do here is to ask the most direct question so that people have the most direct so they can indicate is within the limits that we can allow their support or opposition is without restricting it any more than absolutely necessary. So here's two choices, two suggestions.
His example included support of the, and the county resources was also part of his example. I should have a copy of it here.
I have.
Oh, you do?
You want to go run some copies of it? No.
No,
I
can.
I like this one.
And Bronson hasn't gone back beyond kind of the legal.
Too bad. He didn't make it here.
I'm
not going to wait for him.
Okay. His one said...
Oh, here. I got copies for it. But. Okay. Oh, I've got one of those. Okay.
Should county resources...
You got two.
...be used to support the Columbia River Crossing locally for an alternative? So he's asking about county resources. And a couple of things... Well, first of all, what's your feedback for the two choices that I could come up with so far? What do you think?
So
I like the big part.
You like what? I'm sorry.
Because I can read
the
it.
The big print. Yeah.
Should Clark County support the Columbia River Crossing CRC light rail?
So first of all, and you and I have had this discussion before, there's a lot more that's included in the project than light rail and tolling, so you're only identifying a couple of different pieces.
That's why I defined the next two.
No, you're saying Clark County support, CRC light rail tolling is defined by the CRC, but you used the pejorative terms.
Purposefully,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But if you were trying to get to have an objective ballot measure that tests in truth, and not based on pejorative terms, then you would want to take those out. Because you're not actually giving the final...
Tell me what you want to add.
Oh, I know. I would just take out the whole light rail tolling thing. And those are pejorative terms that are used to try to...
I'll just add that the description in Bronson's example here was taken straight away from the record of decision. So that's why it sounds the way it does, just to put it out there. It's the record of decisions language in terms of a description.
I mean, if you put pejorative terms in, people will immediately dismiss it. People who would like to dismiss it anyway.
Okay, then what we can do, I understand. So if we strike...
But it is light rail.
It is, but...
It's also a bridge and interchanges.
If you combine
it, it says that in
yes,
here.
It
together
is.
Here. So here's an alternative. Should Clark County support the Columbia River Crossing? You can strike out the rest of it, and which includes from the last words from the other one, which includes light rail and tolls.
It doesn't include anything else.
That's it.
Again, it's still pejorative. You're not saying what else is in there. I mean, and you're doing it on purpose, and that's fine.
Well,
but I'm telling you, if you make it pejorative, I people will just blow it off.
Well. That's the reason that people would stand. If it didn't have tolls, and if it didn't have the extra costs that come with light rail, and the extra turning downtown into Vancouver, downtown into a parking lot for Portland, and if
Doesn't
it didn't have
that.
Light rail because you're going to kill the jobs because you can't get the elevation high enough, we'd all vote for it.
That's your opinion. That is not.
That's right.
That is just your opinion. That's not like setting objective ballot measure language. I did survey research for 7 years, and you know, if you set this type of language, no reasoned entity would ever take the results seriously, because if you create pejorative terms in the language, it's all about the question you ask. You know that. I mean, because every time that the CRC has asked a question, you and people who support you come and glue and say, how dare you write this, and you obviously drove toward a result. They'll do the same thing to you. I'm just telling you. And then you'll be using public resources to angle toward that.
Yes.
No.
Go ahead.
So, you did the small printed one. So that would be the policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I combine the two of them.
I kind of like the word should.
Okay.
The should is the beginning of a question.
The should is the second one that he wrote. I looked at the timestamps on it, and this one is the second one you wrote, so I assume it's the updated version of this.
Yes.
Yeah. So the bigger print one is the last one that Commissioner Madore wrote. So instead of us going through the detail, there are two things I would request, I guess, right now. First is, instead of us going and arguing over the detail of it, to get you suggestions on this, both of us and all of us basically get suggestions. And whether you take them or not, or whether you guys take them or not, or that so be it. And then we come back and we get two things. First of all, we both have a chance to look at it because we just saw it.
Second of all, we get an answer from Bronson as to, okay, what are the, you know, what are the issues we need to be aware of as we're doing that, and come back next week with Bronson and with everybody being on the same page. Is that okay?
Next week we will make a decision.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. I mean, like us, like
that'd
make a decision.
Goal.
Are we good? As far as like that, the goal is to make a decision next week on language.
Yeah.
To move forward.
Just to, okay. Just to talk about the terms a little bit here. Just looking at the original one from Bronson Potter, that also uses the pejorative terms of it to define years in the on the in the other side of the coin. People look at that and say, well, what's the locally preferred alternative? That means we prefer it. Well, sure. In reality, the locally preferred, well, would you like to support something that we prefer?
Well,
so,
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you on that. I mean, it's a NEPA term, but I totally agree with you. When you put that in, that also becomes pejorative, and it says the CRC product is defined in the final impact statement to include.
So you can include the basics. It does include light rail. It does include tolls. It includes
a replacement bridge.
A replacement bridge and tears down the original bridge.
And includes 5 interchanges.
The number is in question.
That is the CRC project.
Right, and that's, but, yeah.
So why can't we just call it the CRC light rail project?
Because it's not the CRC light rail project, it's the CRC project that includes more than just light rail. It is a pejorative term to say that it is the CRC light rail project because that's only one aspect of the actual project. That makes it pejorative. So if you want to test the support for light rail, then you get more of an answer on that, and then you would want to be more specific. Do you support, or should the county support light rail on that?
First of all, the Columbia River Crossing by itself implies the bridge. We don't have any say-so on the bridge.
We don't have say-so on any of it, except for a C-TRAN board member.
We do, because light rail affects the tax structure of Clark County.
But we don't have any authority over it other than as C-TRAN board members.
No, but this is an advisory vote of the people. And so you need to properly identify that portion that we're talking about.
Okay. So again, and so think about that, because that is a valid point. I think what Commissioner Medora is trying to get is a larger, like, up or down, do you support this project or not? And so that's the goal that's trying to be sought here, kind of thinking through what you were just talking through and bring back some ideas for it, and I'll do the same. I promise I will bring back ideas to do the same.
Yeah. I just to start with some common ground to see where we have a basic foundation. I think the Columbia River Crossing is common to all of us, I think.
Yeah, right? It's the terminology. Okay. That's different. Yeah.
And we ought to include the basic components, which would include...
That we have any authority over.
And that's the question that he'll have to come back for.
Well, actually, you don't have to say what you have authority over, because this is really asking us whether or not we should support this, and we define what is support, staff...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
Should we support it?
Yeah.
Just an advisory board.
And I like should Clark County, because that speaks two ways. One, it says we as a Clark County government, and it also says we as a Clark County, as Clark County, as citizens. So it's generic enough to include all of that.
Gotcha. Okay. So I think we understand where you're trying to get with that. Okay. We'll come back with some ideas, and we'll get some information from Bronson as well on the legal side of it.
Right. The other side of this is when. And it appears because the fiscal year for the Federal Transit Administration ends before the November election, the appropriate time to do this would be for the primary.
I agree.
Okay. You agree?
I don't know. I need to think about that a little bit. Because I get the pros and cons with both. I just would need to think after a little bit.
I think it would be more representative if it was in the general, because you're going to have more people voting.
Yeah,
which actually opens the door.
I hear that, but if you want to have the voice of the people heard, you don't want to hear the voice of the people after you make a decision.
Thus the pro of doing it too. Yeah, and I get. I mean, yeah. I get the pros and cons of doing, you know, of doing, I don't know.
My favorite journey in the meeting?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Well, you know the dates, right? I got the dates.
Yeah.
It's May 10th. Well, we're looking at making a decision like next week.
Maybe
so,
next
week.
Yeah. And that's that. We need to have it.
And we need to know the price, too, because the price goes up when you're in the
primary. Well, yeah, in the primary it will go up because we're not going to be sharing the ballot with very many people. So that's actually, okay.
It's about $75,000.
Well, so that's a good question, though, is let's get, so we'll have three pieces. First of all, we'll all come back and
we'll
have ideas.
Share it with the pre-holders.
Yeah. And the second thing that we'll do, that's still us, you realize. I don't know who you're sharing it with.
Oh, we get more for the bang for the buck.
Yeah, there you go. So the second thing is that we'll get Bronson to come back. And the third thing is get a cost evaluation of primary or general of this year, an estimate from Lickness.
You know, I'm toying with the idea of putting an invocation on the ballot.
You're killing me. You're killing me, Smalls. All right. Nah.
But, you know, and
you're being serious.
And,
I
say that because we try real hard to represent the majority, and then some people, just like the vote we did last November, some people don't know what that vote meant. And so you need to go back out there and say, this is what it meant. Do you agree or disagree?
All right, something to think. Yeah, I hear you. All right, we'll think about that. Kennel ordinance review parameters. Specifically, we're looking for scope. You're here a little early, but it's good you're here. Or you're not here early.
Actually,
we're a little late.
Sorry.
About
that. Can we do the easy one?
Which one's the easy one?
Oh, that's B. Sorry. Go ahead.
What's easy?
I guess we can't. No.
No.
Sorry.
Go
no.
Ahead.
The last one on old business is the kennel ordinance review. We talked about it when Yuri came in. Kennel ordinance review. I guess what staff is looking for is they understand our wanting to, much like we did with wineries, come back and say, look, this is, as you said in the hearing, all these new ordinances, a lot of times they are a work in progress. We need to adjust based on what we find out, you know, the potential unintended consequences were. The biggest issue that they seem to be dealing with is the noise issue, right? Is that they're saying, well, you got to build all these things and do all of this stuff, whether it be landscaping or otherwise, to get to no noise coming, you know, through. That's not the standard we've done for anybody else, is no noise.
Right.
So the parameters I would like us to give for the kennel ordinance, because I think it'll fix it, is us dealing with the noise piece of it, and then back from that say, okay, if the noise that we're going to end up with is the WAC limit at property line, then however you want to get there, whether it's a building, whether it's, you know, a fence, whether whatever it is that gets you to that point, that's up to you to figure that out. And that takes a lot of the design standard crud that's expensive away from what they would have to do.
I like that.
So
in addition to that, we have to address the term of the noise. How long that noise goes on.
And I think that's covered in the WAC as well, but we can make sure.
Yeah,
it is. That's how you define a decibel. It's a one-hour time reading.
It depends on the noise.
Right.
What noise it is.
But we can get that information.
Yes.
If we
talked about continuous.
Correct.
10 minutes for 1 hour.
Yes.
We have to decide what that's going to be.
And we could have a work session. We could have a work session on that. But Commissioner Midoriya.
Yes. This is, if we take the model for this, the Humane Society, they have a brick building, they have all kinds of barking dogs on the inside, and they have, when it comes time for them to get, for the doggy to get outside and get the exercise, they put them on a leash, they take them, they walk them outside. During that time, the dog can bark. So one way to handle this would be just like the Humane Society, the place for the dog is indoor in a brick building or something like it that basically is naturally, the barking is not going to go outside. And the dog can go outside as long as the person's holding the leash. They can bark as much as they want.
I have a couple comments.
All right.
Marty.
Only if you don't mind.
No, go ahead. Please.
So there's a secondary issue, which I'll talk about in a minute. The ordinance we crafted said a soundproof building, right? There is no such thing. Because a building like that has to have ventilation.
Yep.
Right. And dogs barking in a brick building will be heard.
Yeah.
But if we need to have at the property line, it's the 50 decibels or whatever the WAC says, and it's time period too.
Right.
The hearings examiner made some pretty tough rulings.
Pretty extreme.
Yes. He took a literal interpretation of soundproof building and not what we had intended. Mm-hmm. So I think keeping the review on the noise is a simple thing. The secondary issue that has come up is because we process this application,
yeah,
and we notify this application, and we provide an opportunity to an appeal, like a home business, the question has come up, do we, this is a county in this ordinance, require a residency for a kennel? You have to live on the property that you also own and operate the kennel, or can you be half a mile removed, you can live in town and have something out in the country, or do you have to live on the 5 acres or the 10 acres?
It is a question that's been brought up by the Becks, and it's something that, at least from my perspective, would be something we have to discuss at the work session is, you know, here are the pros and cons of actually talking about it, because there's a lot of different ways to look at it. You can look at it from a home business ordinance perspective. You can look at it from a commercial business perspective. There's a lot of different pieces to it.
And the ordinance is silent.
Commercial. What's that? Yeah,
the ordinance is silent.
It's just a single piece. Do you add it or not?
I think someone has to be there.
Well, you might have an operator there, yes.
Yeah.
But the operators may not...
But are they
give a rip
so
about
that at night
their neighbors,
like,
because they don't live there.
Yeah, yeah, but you still have to be there. I'm saying that because of control of animals.
Technically, right. The owner is the operator.
If for whatever reason their wild critter got the dog barking,
right,
it's up to him to go out and shut him up. So
that's
I think
a secondary
it has
issue
to be manned.
You should be aware of.
Understood.
It has to be manned. I
agree. I agree with that.
We're not, it's a commercial business. He's not a home business. And that's where we have to separate those.
True, it's just, you know,
but
you know how it is, man.
Yeah.
You get into the rural
I sympathize and want to work with the banks whether they want to work or not. You have to respect that.
Right, and primarily those the impacts, and the impacts for them are the noise. I mean,
yeah,
and the impacts are that they hate each other as neighbors,
really,
but I mean,
yeah,
ultimately we
I'm
can't
really
solve that.
I'm really curious as to what those decibels would be.
Yeah. We'll get the whack on
inside that, and I love the idea of going out to the dog kennel,
yeah,
going there and bang the drum, get everybody barking, run outside and meet her.
Well,
that's a nice test. Let me
tell you, chat with you from a first-hand experience. Just last week, I had to kennel my dog because I was at the coast for a few days. Out in Fern Prairie.
I got that complaint.
I drove up the driveway, and you can hear the dogs barking as you're driving up the driveway. Daytime, you know, 5 o'clock or whatever.
So they may have been out in the yard or something.
Oh, yeah, and I had to catch the gal. I waited for her because she was walking.
Is that the one in the paper? A lot of the kennels have little
rats.
Well,
across the noise.
And then with the buffer.
She lives next door to a guy who owns a saw shop.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So are we good as far as scope goes?
I know you're
entertaining yourself. Are we good with scope on that?
So I've got
a study we're going to do.
Noise.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. That's what we're going to do. Is and they'll bring it to us in work session, and then you know.
Noise and residency.
Yeah, the residency thing is a secondary issue that you can just bring up at the work session.
It's
like,
not a home business; it's commercial. So
right. Exactly.
I'm reluctant to mandate. I think because of the
more about the impact,
it has to be someone has to be there.
You have to have an operator, on-site operator.
Yeah.
There you go.
For control. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sweet. You are here, Marty. So why don't we jump down? We'll come back to commissioner report or you know commissioner
oh
issues.
My goodness,
sorry, man.
Goodness.
I know I'm going.
No,
off
I got
script
a good
here.
One for
Where
you.
Going?
What did I do with that?
I wanted though. You had a silly
you
permanent
gave
thing.
It to, no,
you
no,
bring it
I
out?
Got a
you
silly permanent thing.
Right,
you gave it to me and I gave it to him.
So he's already
didn't
got
go to you yet. Yeah, you did. I gave it to him.
I wanted
you to even take your word.
They told me to.
This one.
The fuck about the one?
Yeah.
No. I got one today.
Silly permitted day, sir.
Today. Did I give you that one, Bill?
Here's a lemon.
Which one's this one? Go ahead, Tom.
Our
commissioner.
Our silly permit books are only good for a short time.
3 minutes.
The 10 coupon book one?
Yes. Why?
Where is that?
Silly permits.
Okay, but what?
When you buy a book.
Book right. 10.
It expires.
It expires when?
I don't know. I'd have to ask Jimmy that question.
Okay. I think I understand they expire in 2 months.
Well, that is silly.
There's one
can
book.
We find out if that's true? That doesn't make sense.
No. Building permits have a shelf life by
the book of 10 coupon thing.
This is the silly permit book.
So you bought book 10?
So what happened? Okay. What happens is that you buy a book of 10 for $660.
Right.
And maybe use one.
And they expire in 2 or 3 months. And the individual that complained today went down to buy his permit, and the bill was, $260 or $360 for one permit. Because he said for him to buy a book that he may not need to use all of those silly permit in that book. It might take him a year.
Yeah.
So why would
Which
we
makes sense.
Not allow
I,
a year?
I will check and get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
He didn't buy the permit today. I think he left stomping his feet.
What was it, a HVAC contractor or?
Do you have the info for Marty so that they can make sure not to charge the guy?
Because the book is limited right now.
No, it doesn't say. I'll find out.
All right, we'll get that.
All it says is this is outlandish prices that I'm talking about. 10% of my job went to the permit. So okay. The permit book is $660
for
10.
Yeah.
That's $66 a piece. And
yeah.
His bill was either $260 or $360. I will give you more specifics.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Along with that, you were going to add other categories of books of 10.
Yes.
Where are we with that?
So we are looking at a book of 10 for minor remodel work to include re-roofing, siding, and window replacement. And roofing contractors... They're doing, you know, a viable roofing business is probably doing 10 a month or more. So I asked Jim, how are we going to structure this? And he said, well, you can pick, you could do 10 re-roofs, or a lot of times you're doing, I'm going to replace some siding and some windows.
Yep.
So you can mix and match. So you could have, you pick the permit. So if it's a re-siding and a window replacement.
More general.
Yeah, because then you can get a...
More choice.
Like, I'm going to hire a contractor to do a few of those things. It'd be cool if you had a book and, like...
That's what we're doing.
Use a few of those.
So to do that, we need to program our Tidemark system, and they're hoping to have that done by the end of the month. So I'm going to have to be coming back to the board first or second week in May with a change to our fee table, because it's going to be more than $660 for 10. It's going to be like $780 because there's more work, more inspection time on siding, window replacement, and roofing, and the push pull water heater HVAC stuff. So it'll be $78.
It'll still be a lot less than it is now, though.
A lot less, correct.
That's good.
So we're going to come back to you first, second week in May with the book of 10 for re-roof, siding, and window replacement.
So
what about
and that includes the hot water ones. One
we already have those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awnings, patio covers, patios.
Those are the things we are going to be coming to the board on when we develop a cost structure on some of those.
When?
I think we are hoping to get to you by like June.
Can we move
let me check with that.
Yeah, let's move it up.
You build a patio? What do you got going on?
Have you been to the fair and you see those people selling those things?
I have.
Go up and talk to them and say, and they've got the stories that they hate the county because of those silly permits that cost so much. So can we move it up? Can we add that to this next package?
Come back in May?
I will do what we can.
See if you can bring it back to us and then do everything you can.
In the meantime, we probably should be giving him a list.
Do you want to have it all at one hearing?
Yeah, I think that's what Commissioner Medora is asking for, is try to push it up, bring it all together.
But I guess if we come forward and we give you ideas what we think might be a silly permit, if it's not, it takes a little bit more involved, you let us know.
If I know it's going to be more than, we can get the book of 10 first week in May, second week in May. Mm-hmm. If it's more than a couple weeks to get the other stuff, I'll move forward on the book of 10 and just...
Now do what you can.
Do what I, I'll try to get everything together in one hearing.
And because you interface with customers all the time, you know, you get the feedback. Yep. What are they crying about? What do they not like?
The commissioners.
And so you're in a position to offer more ideas than we are because you're
absolutely right.
We didn't talk about it much at the work session this morning, but with the meeting we had at the building industry, we had very favorable feedback. And the new manager we've hired. A couple guys say, yeah, I didn't know who he was. He was out helping and he was directing. And it's like, well, I didn't know he was the manager. I said, well, I hired this fellow because he's kind of a working manager. And he's going to be pushing things through and out. So.
And there are still, and to be honest, I mean, it's a good point because when 8 years ago when I first got here, there were a lot of angry folk. And it was the building community had like a real problem with the county. I mean, as an industry. And Marty, when he came in, it's come a long way. If you ask the engineering community, the building community, it's come a long way. We still have issues. We still have silly permits we got to deal with. We still have individuals that are saying this is ridiculous. But it is definitely better than it was because it was brutal.
But you gentlemen have to continue the feedback to him because there is a whether or not it's justified or not, there's an intimidation factor with customers. Ooh, if I bring that up with them at the counter and tell them how stupid it is or how silly it is, I may not get my permit or I may have to go through a hoop. So your input to him is really critically important because they have no fears of coming to you and saying, hey, that thing is really silly.
They really don't.
We do have that suggestion box down there, right?
And one thing to keep in mind, Commissioner, on that thread, one thing I look at is we issued 192 single residence permits last year. I didn't get one complaint. So... Yeah. We're doing something right. We're doing something right down there.
That is definitely on the complaint-based system. Cool. All right. So that's the silly permit side. Go ahead, Tony.
While Marty's here,
you
have a suggestion box down there, right?
We do the surveys. I don't know if that.
I don't know if we do. I don't know if we do or not. I could not tell you.
That's a good idea.
I was under the impression you had a survey or
we do have. We are developing a survey.
They hand out my card
and the comment card.
Yeah, we have a comment card.
Yeah, one of those things. We would like to have those shared, and what I'm suggesting is we have a routing paper on it, and we get one from the sheriff's office, and it's just something that we would it would help us. Yeah. Maybe you may think it's not, but when it gets up here, we might say, well, maybe it is, so maybe we'll talk to you about it.
I've seen these suggestion forms. They're the smallest little post-it you can get.
Well,
the 1 inch by 1 inch.
We talked about it last week at board time, trying to, you know, that when you get those comment cards filled out, that we'd like to see how that goes. And
Well, Chuck mentioned it today. We're going to do it like a SurveyMonkey type on a tablet, so we can get all that data and give it to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you're going to compile the comment cards that you get.
I would just have a rough form.
We have forms now.
If you do the SurveyMonkey, that's an online thing.
Yeah.
That we can all gain access to, so that somebody doesn't have to be routing. It's like we have access.
Agreed.
And that also can be filled out anywhere from home.
Yeah.
So they're not having this.
It's true.
So that would be a very good way to go.
So we're it's funny how
people want the cars filled out. He went to SurveyMonkey. I know how that goes.
Yeah.
We're experimenting. Right. We'll get something, and it'll be some kind of tablet at the counter when somebody is getting their information. Do you mind taking 2 or 3 minutes to fill out the survey? Not even 15 questions.
Yeah. Well, actually, the SurveyMonkey thing is when it comes to getting feedback from our customers.
Yeah.
That's not just permits. That's a lot of stuff we do at the county. Bill, would that be something that you want to come up? See what you work with the staff
what
that would allow them to say
that on online survey.
What topic?
SurveyMonkey is the name of an online survey.
That's not what I was talking about, though.
No.
It's not like the trunk monkey.
It's different. So that doesn't like replace the paper.
Yeah, it doesn't replace the paper.
It'd
be an addition.
Yeah. So I was talking about.
We'll do it.
What do you
We'll print it out for you.
Anyway, survey. What do you do with your
allow them to
hard copy paper?
Hold on, guys. David, sorry.
What do you do? You look at them and.
I think they're kept in a file. Yeah. I'll get them scanned to me and let it.
I don't know if you've seen. We have a one that we get from claims department, and it just gives us a chance to glance at them. And what it does for me personally is that if I see something repeatedly over and over and over again, then I'll make a remark to Bill. I think Bill makes a remark to the sheriff, saying, "Hey, we're having too many items missing in the sheriff's office," or something like that. And so, whether we see it or not, it's just like a thing is stapled to
those
it.
Those are lawsuits.
Lawsuits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It just has all of our names on it, and we see it, and we glance at it, sign it, take it back in the folder, and it's passed around.
If we have surveys that we keep on file, we can just make copies and or scan them and send them to you.
Perfect. For the comic card.
Yes.
And now, Commissioner Medora, you
I'll work with Bill for one
kind of a Survey Monkey style.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
And we can then come up with something
awesome.
And suppose it would be fine.
Yeah. It's a great idea. I'd love to see that. All right.
There are some exciting things that we're looking at in the Permit Center. The remodel is even...
Excellent.
I'm getting excited about that.
Good. Right along. You talked a lot about that already today. I want to stay focused.
Because your desk is going to be right in the middle.
Stay focused with me, Axel.
Yeah. Dream smart.
Fee waiver proposal. That's the other thing you're here for, and I want to make sure we get through that for you.
So I'm going to draw up on the board.
We have a May 7th hearing.
Jeez.
No, I'm not going to draw. I'm going to write.
Oh, okay.
What other silly permits do we have that we have in that book?
That are in the book we already have?
Roofing, siding, hot water, swing sets.
Well, no swing sets. We don't require a permit.
Awnings, patios, patio covers.
Well, no. The ones that we already have.
Ones we already have.
Is there anything else that we already have in the book of 10? The existing book of 10. What does that
The existing book of 10 is water heaters, furnaces, heat pumps. It's in the world of the HVAC contractors.
No, installation.
No, installation. Yeah.
Plumbing.
Yeah. They're Jim calls them push pull. So they're water heaters,
plumbing and
furnaces, heat pumps. Okay. It's in the world of the HVAC contracting.
Okay.
So while Marty draws, we have a hearing. Yeah, I'll just tee this up for him.
Okay. Well,
Just to validate your thing, and I already have an optional letter.
You guys gave us direction at the work session to bring TIF and development fee waivers tied to the unemployment trigger to hearing. We set the hearing date May 7th, so that's roughly a month away. Mm-hmm. The two major considerations that we've got to bring forth with the resolutions to that hearing are what the costs of both of those programs would be estimated at, and then also we've got to answer a legal question on the TIF side. What is our legal mechanism going to be to waive the TIFs at that level between now and this fall? So those are the two things we'll talk about at the hearing. The two major things.
Whatever we do, we have to remember to not devalue anybody that has TIF credits out there.
That's why we're not proposing to eliminate the program altogether.
Or we'll have to buy them back, one or the other.
Yeah.
I assume that for business properties, that there are no other impact fees. There's not park, there's not schools. They have to do with business properties. Right?
No, there are. I'm pretty sure.
There are.
And commercial. Mm-hmm. But commercial doesn't pay school, I don't think.
I don't know. My assumption was it would be where they are.
So the other one is parks?
Yeah, I think
so. Business properties
pay in a parks district?
I don't know. Actually, I don't remember that
can
one.
Can we find
PIFs.
Out?
Marty, do you remember?
What?
If commercial pays PIFs?
No. Commercial only pays traffic.
Okay, so yeah, they'd be the closest to it. So other
I'm
industries.
About commercial over industrial business, basically.
Right, and those other businesses, yeah, they don't. Because if commercial doesn't, then they don't.
Okay, so there are, if we take away TIFs, there are no other impact fees associated with job creation.
Correct.
Parks, schools, traffic.
Those are three.
Job creation?
No.
Those are the three impact fee categories.
So you're right. Right. Is the bottom line?
Yes. Apply
you're
to
correct.
Job
Correctioner.
That's residential.
Okay. All right. Go for it, Mark.
So just very quickly, this is something Axel and I sketched out with Chris Horn and was anybody else in my office?
Nobody. Chris Cook was.
Okay. So
we had two attorneys for that one.
Yeah. Along the continuum of what you're most interested in is you have a shell building, it's a vacant building, mm-hmm. all you have to do is tenant improvements, okay? Mm-hmm. That's people can do that now, meaning they apply for a building permit and they're in 3 months or whatever the time is. Two, they have bare dirt, they don't even have preliminary approval from land use, from engineering. That's the far end of the spectrum. The two in between are they have preliminary approval and they have their engineering approval, so they can go to their site construction, okay, ground down. The second from the right is they have preliminary approval, but they've not submitted their, they've submitted their engineering, but they don't have the final, and they get into stormwater issues, okay? So our thinking was, you know, a timing mechanism, and it's all your direction on full waivers, partial waivers, that Shell is...
So what this goes to is how much time we're going to give people to utilize the waiver, just to throw it out there. Remember, we talked about the two-tiered system, so that's what this is.
And right now, the resolution, every resolution we've had has given the applicant from the first resolution expired 2011. We gave people until June or July of 2012 to get their first building permit, their first building inspection that's required. So it requires that you build, that you don't just get your approval and sit on it and sit on it and sit on it, right? So the Shell is could be that the waiver is you're compelled to do work within 3 months, 6 months, whatever. And then again, the far end is we'll give you a waiver, but you can't just sit on it and sit on it and sit on it. We have some of those from the 2010-11 resolution. So that's kind of the concept now. How much you waive, you know, if you want to give partial waivers to people who need entitlement, and maybe as they progress along the line, you could when they get to build, then it's a full waiver. So it's just a matter of what's the board's preference on.
Well, if we break this down into the easiest, quickest thing to implement, just to focus to get that portion of the puzzle done, just to focus on filling our vacant buildings so we get tenant improvements into a existing Shell.
Right.
The just consider that just for a moment so we can be done with that part. I am assuming that's going to be the greatest benefit for us, because you're going to get is near instant job creation. You're going to get instant or near instant sales tax revenue. You're going to get appreciated values assumed, but the sales tax revenue, that hits the target. So I would assume we would say waive it, hit zero on that. Are we in agreement for that?
And then right now the resolution has you have to create 10 jobs.
Yeah, well, so it's not job. It's not number of jobs related. Every job counts.
Agreed, so it was 50% for commercial and 100% for any other job classification.
Correct.
Because then, you know, a Walmart comes in and builds, or Chucks, or anything in between.
Chucks was a 50% waiver.
The Walmart is not going to move into an existing building.
Agreed. So the question is, well, but we do have empty storefronts, so they could. I mean, we actually have an empty Albertsons.
Which would be fabulous. Because what are you going to do? Okay. If the people who built that already paid the TIFs.
They'll do the traffic analysis and they won't have to pay much, and then it'll be half of that. So it's a low amount that they pay half of. The original, I mean, that would be an additional change to the resolution, because what we talked about was simply saying, let's take off the 10 jobs and let's trigger it based on, your idea was trigger it based on the timing of the unemployment rate and then take away the 10. This would be a new change in saying, okay, well, let's not care about whether it's commercial or not.
If it's a place of employment, it qualifies.
I think there's givers and takers, using your terminology, and commercial in a large sense. If you look at, they give revenue, right? Sales tax revenue. That's
lots
great.
Of it.
Which is great, but the low wages that are generally paid on average from a commercial facility create. Employment opportunities that don't give, they actually take on the service capacity point of view. So, but it's ultimately the choice of the board if we want to change that.
I give some, we had to work on a few specific examples. Here's one. out near our area, there's a QFC that went out of went out of business about five or six years ago.
Longer than that, sir.
It's just sitting
it's been there.
There
forever.
It's a place of darkness. It's empty.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who built that building already paid all the fees and all the every sort to the impact fees for everything to build that. It would be a great plus for that area and any place else that situation exists to get a tenant in there because, hey, why wouldn't we? This is the beef. This
okay.
Is, so if they already have a shelf,
right.
Then we wouldn't zing them. And that rules out situations like, well, there's a new Walmart because
gotcha.
They don't have an
existing
building.
I'm with you because my underlying intent is somebody's already built the parking area and they've built the building, then they've already built it to the capacity of who can go to the store.
Yes.
So I'm good.
Right.
So yes, good. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that.
Good.
As far as for shell, for tenant improvement side.
Yes, 100% shell tenant improvement waiver.
And no.
How much time do they get? 6 months, a year?
Oh, wait a minute. Whoa.
Hold on.
Are we talking, you're talking TIF.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. TIF is a waiver it's already paid for. Now we come back and we address the shell.
And we're talking about TIF waiver for shell. The Commissioner Medora is saying, all right, let's address just the shell piece first.
This is for tenant improvement.
Okay,
point of clarification.
Yeah, we had two different issues.
Point of clarification. Existing shell buildings,
yes.
Most of them, a vast majority, have already paid
right.
impact fees.
Yes.
So there's no impact fee at the time of the tenant improvement.
Unless, but
there
a lot of times
exceptions.
They're required to do a traffic study. And this is what I argue against, is that they're required to do a traffic study to show that there won't be additional traffic coming from there. My point is that the parking lot's only so big. So unless they're going to build a new parking lot, it's still the same number of cars coming in and out. So I don't care necessarily who moves into it for the purpose of traffic impact fees because they already paid them for as many spaces as they have. So we're good.
So what about development fees? Development fees on tenant improvements?
Well, we haven't got that yet.
I'm selfishly
looking at any building or building.
And I think that's what he's trying to get to, is that is the next section of for shell tenant improvement. Our fee waiver, our fee holiday, it's not just TIFs, it's also the development fees associated with it. And it was the same percentages and the same rules for both.
Well, can we do this? You've got four columns up there. Can you write A, B, C, D, so that we're only at this point talking about column A?
Right, and that's what he is doing.
Good. So are we on the same page at 100%? You waive 100% of the TIFs for column A.
Yes.
But to me, I thought A, B, C, D was bare property.
No, bare property is D.
That's D.
Okay.
You've got what one of my staff said. I've got a parcel number and a dream.
Okay, so we're only focusing on column A right
correct.
Now. So what else did they get free? What else did
the development fees.
Okay.
So currently they get 100% fee reduction if it is non-commercial jobs, and they get a 50% reduction if it's commercial jobs. So that's for the development fee side of it. That's okay. It's the same percentages as it was for
more retail than commercial, though.
Whatever,
so office,
yeah.
I think, is considered jobs as opposed to retail.
Fair enough.
Jobs.
Fair enough.
So I propose that we waive 100% of the development fees for column A. The goal is to get those existing assets occupied.
I follow you.
Okay. Commissioner Milkey?
Where are we today with that?
50% for commercial. Wait, 50% for retail, 100% for all other.
So it goes
jobs.
Back. It goes back to
with tenant.
I don't want to give someone 100% if they don't create 10 jobs.
The thing is that
I don't want someone to come in and say I'm gonna have a two man warehouse.
This is an existing shell that's sitting there empty.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to incentivize them so that they will get in there. Every job counts, and the number of jobs will be proportional to the size of the building that's already there that they've already paid.
Yeah, depending. Dollar Tree warehouse.
Yeah, depending on if it's a warehouse.
And Dollar Tree warehouse is freaking huge.
Versus a restaurant or something.
Yeah.
Not many warehouses sitting empty though.
Mm-hmm. Right. So most of the time we're talking about like
office
and commercial.
Yeah. It's your Best Buy, your QFC, and the other Best Buy.
Well, mini malls.
Sure. Town centers.
Yeah,
I'm good with doing the 100% reduction on that for the shell, because the shell tenant improvement, I agree that is that's low-hanging fruit as far as getting people in there, whether it be commercial retail or whether it be office, business park, or industrial. It's low-hanging fruit to actually get people and jobs and commerce.
Right.
And even if it's like, say you have a business park and you bring in some retail associated, I mean, that retail, it's just like
enhances.
The Freddy's down here.
It's
it
like
enhances. Yeah, I mean, you get an anchor tenant, or you get tenants in there that actually improve the willingness of other business owners to come in. So
we've had a couple of incidences here of the past of people moving into an existing shell.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we were in there requiring engineering to be done basically petitions or a restroom that was added or something. And
well, and that's the other side of it, is that, I mean, and it goes beyond the scope of what we're talking, but it's true in that if you just get rid of the financial incentive and you say to Marty's shop, you say, okay, well, it's free, then, you know, I liked, and the reason why we made it kind of fee-based, first of all, was financial. Second of all, it was to create pressure to say, okay, well, time is money, and so, if you're charging someone more, they're going to get mad about that, so it helps create a pressure to minimize process. And what we don't want is to say, okay, it's free, but we still require a bunch of process for a tenant improvement, because then we're still not getting where we want to go, right? We still need to do the lean, kind of the processing. We need to be better at processing these tenant improvements as well, I guess, is the bottom line of that.
Well, the bottom line of this is our unemployment rate.
Right, but you can't get in the door. I mean, even if you don't pay for it, and that's a good incentive, but if you're going through a bunch of hoops and you have to get a bunch of permits, which is what Commissioner Mielke is saying, you're still not open. So we've got to do that piece as well. But
well, keep in mind, we've already had in place this fee holiday that says if you do 10 or more, and it has not helped to the degree that we need help for our unemployment.
Kind of the economy. I mean, the economy is such. We've done really well in a bad economy. With that, thank God it didn't boom, because we would be pulling that out of the general fund of the $500,000, I think is where we are.
Which is all the
and
more
so,
reason.
So what I'm concerned about, when someone moves into a large vacant QFC building or something, it's not just black and white. Are you going to remodel when you get in there? Are you going to change the plumbing? Are you going to change the electrical? What are you going to do about the sprinkler system?
Are you going to do a use that requires that has hazardous materials or other types that require additional remodeling that also requires more permitting?
There can be exceptions that we can consider. Think about it. Let's suppose because a building like a shopping center that has an anchor that's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When an anchor leaves, all the other businesses, they end up going away as well. That's what happened out there at the QFC. There, basically, even a haircut place couldn't survive after the anchor went.
Yeah,
so when you encourage an anchor to go in and occupy something like that, now you lit up the rest of that complex, because now people say, there's customers coming in here, and so they're going to frequent my place too.
So we're going to have a definition of anchor?
No, we keep it simple. The simpler we can keep this, the more
I imagine the QFC is the anchor, and the barber shop wasn't. So we got to define what an anchor business is.
No.
So if
I'm just using that as an example, whether it be an anchor.
Well,
or
I'm going back, and we're going to have to provide some service. Our fire marshal has to go there.
Mm-hmm. We're still going to do all that stuff.
We're
just not going to charge him a fee.
And
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we're still going to do it.
We're going to pay the fire marshal.
The general fund.
We're priming the fund because
I'm running out of money in the general fund.
Well,
you're
think
right.
About it. Let's suppose you got a QFC that it's sitting there for what? For how many years, Mario?
Well, the new QFC on 192nd closed that place down. It was just a placeholder for them.
But how much are you leaving on that table?
Sales tax.
And they were still paying $100,000 a year.
It's a double edged sword. You get more revenue.
Even though there's empty on that.
On a lag, on a 1.5 to 2.
You're going to take it on the chin up front.
We just had I think it was a QFC that just went in on the corner of Hazeldale on 99.
What?
I was at the grand opening. They weren't aware. I don't think they were aware until I said something to them that we had some free holidays.
Oh, that was the old Albertsons?
The Albertson.
The old Albertson.
The old Albertson. Yeah, the old Albertson.
Albertson.
It used to be there. The QF.
Grocery outlet.
Yeah.
Grocery outlet.
Not the same level.
It's still it filled in.
Well, I think the practical reality is that the QFC at 162nd, you're going to get another grocer or something similar to
right.
it. Because they're not going to, you know, you're going to find a space that's going to suit your business needs rather than spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in changing the occupancy type. The one that I would be interested in, you know, what happens to it eventually is the old, is it Staples or Best Buy and Hazeldell Town Center? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen with that?
Staples too. Wasn't there one there?
How about the golf store?
The Best Buy is a special example because the owners in Chicago are basically using it as a tax write-off. They don't have an incentive. They don't really think of it as a
like the amphitheater.
It's just
that
a tax
could turn into an office building with a bunch of cubicles.
I guess if you're going to say, okay, the guy can come in there, everything's free, we're not going to inspect it.
Well, we're going to still inspect it.
We're going to do all the work.
We're going to do
the work.
We're
just not going to charge
the work. We're priming the pump.
We have to do the work.
Imagine, Tom, for a minute, you've had a building that's been sitting there empty all these years. They're not paying any sales tax. As soon as they go in, now they're paying sales tax every month. That's revenue.
I think that someone would have gone in there already, just like
Fred Meyer.
Groceries that did. Right. And they went in there and had no idea that we were given.
Is your premise, Commissioner, that our fees are not keeping them from developing?
I think it's half and half. Okay. But if you go in there and say, you know, you're going to an existing building where you don't pay any TIF fees because they're already paid. But I can't go in and what other fees are we going to give them for free? What other services?
There is only the building fee.
They're moving in.
That's the only fee that we would waive was a building fee.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we call it a pilot program?
What building? You're talking about going in and remodeling?
Yeah, it works.
We would waiver that?
Yeah. The enforcement.
What about the fire marshal inspection?
That's part of it.
It adds up, you know.
Those newer buildings, so they're going to have the sprinkler system. They're not going to have to do anything with that. I mean,
the fire marshal is on payroll, whether he's out there inspecting or not. We're not increasing the cost of the fire marshal because he's already on staff.
The fire marshal is paying for himself as to what he charges.
Yeah. The general fund doesn't subsidize 100%.
Not the new construction. They're funded just like the building
and
department.
So we're not a whole lot different than what we are, but what we're doing, we are removing the requirement to have 10 new jobs.
On the shell stuff is what I'm hearing.
What this is a press release that says, hey, you want to blow the doors wide open on job creation? We just did it. Here's the opportunity. Go for it.
There we go.
The floodgates are open.
Versus we tweaked it a little bit. And yeah.
I mean, one of the things we'll do, you know, when we get the parameters out of this board time, we're going to start looking at the
cost.
You know, cost implication to this.
Yeah,
and the best model we have is the 2010-11 resolution where anything go, anything went. We had piddly stuff, piddly stuff like $282 we're waiving up to, you know, 12,000. So we can look at.
I don't have a problem with those. How many of those do we have?
Well, we had a lot in 10-11.
I mean, in one building.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how many? That's my concern. How many other fees are we foregoing?
We're only foregoing the building fee revenue.
But no, they're saying development.
I talked to.
There's no.
Aren't you?
I talked to
everything.
A gentleman.
I'm talking about everything for category A.
So,
and that includes development.
Again, point of clarification. Yeah, the building's there. Yeah. They paid for their planning. They paid for their engineering. They paid for their development inspection on the site. So the only thing they're paying for is a plan review for the building and the building permit. And that's it.
Yeah.
They might trigger the fire marshal review, which is only like $450.
So to try to move us along. So all right, tenant improvement. So think about this. So tenant improvement is a relatively narrow review process, right? Because they already have the shell. There's internal work that would need to be done, but as far as development building review, you know, it's plan review. It's relatively straightforward and simple. So. And what, you know, so my thought is throw 100% at that one, at tenant improvement, because it's narrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not going from bare dirt. If you go from bare dirt on a project,
we're spending a ton of time, and there's potentially huge impacts to our traffic infrastructure, you know, transportation infrastructure associated with that. But on tenant improvement, not so much. It's pretty narrow. So can we at least start with 100%?
Yeah.
So 100% on tenant improvement.
You had two votes already.
Yeah, I was trying to find a path forward. So, all right. So no permit fees or TIFs on shell.
Nothing. 100% waiver on building. 100%.
So let's
fill the empty. Fill the vacancy.
Right.
While we're addressing those things,
yep,
you might be looking at a zoning, because I've had I've had one case that did not include zoning and one case that did.
If it gets to zoning, you're talking, it goes to a hearings examiner, yeah, there's a public hearing, there are appeal opportunities. If you're talking comp plan amendment and zoning, you're talking a legislative.
Right. That's outside the framework of this.
Oh, well, I'm talking about the same vacant building.
Oh.
I'm talking about the same vacant building. Sure. I'll use the exercise people that's still up in the air, the people that possibly had an assault charge on them, as an example.
Oh, yeah.
They went into a warehouse and used part of the warehouse as like a gymnasium type thing. So I guess when we're looking at things like this, we probably should be looking at those also.
And we did. The employment lands created better flexibility within those buildings, so we don't have to do as many rezones. Right. And so that they're...
That's an example.
Sure.
We have more work to do.
What are you doing?
6 months, then? 6 months is the... have to utilize it within 6 months.
Is that reasonable?
I think does that work?
Yeah, pick a reasonable date. If 6 months is reasonable,
God bless. It's going to take 3 months to get the word out.
No. 6 months from when they get it.
So I thought you'd go use the Columbia.
No. Shit.
We need to, like,
you guys just sitting there all quiet and you're like,
Google project.
Did he wake up?
All right.
Okay, so is that, does that wrap up Category A?
Yes.
Have we hit a home run as much as we can possibly hit on Category A?
Zero.
Depends on
outside of breaking the law, we're going
hit with baseball bat.
You're
going to
start paying them.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
We're all right.
Can we go to the?
Yeah, go to the other extreme, and then we'll work in between it. So preliminary. Right.
Well, actually, let's do this. However far we get, if it ends up that we delay or for someone to take more work to do with them, let's go ahead and put the Category A on the fast track. And if we take an extra week or two or three or four or five to move across progressively than the others, we can go back and we can sweeten it with Category B.
We have a hearing coming up May 8th, right?
7th.
May 7th. So we have a hearing coming up May 7th to change, to amend the fee holiday. So that's a good time to do it. So I think let's do D, and the reason he's going to D is then you set the sideboards for it, and then they can kind of come back with some ideas for him, fill it in the middle and give some ideas.
Okay.
But keep moving on it.
Absolutely.
Keep pressure. Put down.
Axel can do tremendous work.
So somebody comes in with a parcel number and a dream. What do you want to charge them? What's the charge?
What's your dream?
So I'll start on this one just to lay it. For me, taking away the 10 is fine for me, because I think, frankly, you know, there were two things that were originally proposed. One was to take away the 10. One was to set a date for when we would come back to this based on our unemployment rate, which I think is great. For me, the FTEs, you know, goes back down. But you're looking at the same 100%, 50%, because commercial retail does have a much higher impact on our roadways than office, business park, or industrial, just because of the sheer numbers of people that come in and out. You talk about kind of the greatest users. For me, it would still, you can't give away 100% of that, or we're going to get crushed.
Let me give you an example.
For the TIFs.
I have an example that might not fit there. I've lost my rural commercial area on Dollar's Corner.
Yeah.
I've lost 5 businesses.
Yep.
Now I have a guy that's going to go back in there, and he's going to build a new business that was just like the one that was removed. It's like a mini mart.
Right.
And I asked him, I said, Garsh, if you could give me 10 employees, you will waiver your transportation fees. And he said, well, Garsh, he says, I only think I need 8. And I said, for what your transportation impact fees would be, you can afford to hire two other people just to stand around, pay their wages, and still save $100,000.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
And he said, nobody got it. You're right.
Blackmailing them.
So,
you know, one
but
of
he
the,
agreed.
One of the interesting things when we had the last hearing on this is we had some information on employment numbers, and for somebody to hire 10 right up out of the chute, that's like what there are stages of business. Remember that? Kelly provided the information. Yeah. And really, a lot of businesses start up and it's two or three or four people.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I'm cool. And I agree with getting rid of that limitation on the 10, because you're right. I mean, you can hire two and be to 10 in 3-4 years, but you do that based on your business model and how well you're doing.
Keep in mind that when, well, let's compare. You got this, you got office building compared to some kind of retail. Which one generates the most sales tax revenue?
Retail.
Doctor's
office.
So, if we're talking about waiving fees for retail, the retail is going to pay those fees back much sooner than the office complex.
But what are you trying to promote? Is this a jobs program or is this a revenue program?
This is letting free enterprise run without us trying to socially engineer it.
But you are if you do that.
Yeah.
This is
you're socially engineering it by what you're doing. Everything you do is
we're
social engineering.
Out of the way.
No,
we're
still doing all the work. We're just not having them pay for it.
Yeah.
You're still socially engineering.
The thing is, keep in mind that there is a... can you draw a graph on there? Just do a vertical line.
XY?
XY.
No, we're going to have to move along.
We're going to see this picture.
We're going to stay out of the philosophy
here.
That's
not philosophy.
Get to be
it's a math. Okay, yep. Okay, draw a horizontal line about two-thirds of the way up.
Horizontal.
Yep. Just draw all the way across from left to right. Okay, yep. And intersect the line. That is a fixed amount of dollars. That's the vertical axis is dollars. That's our fee. They pay that one time. It's not ever going to increase. We got it. They paid for it.
Oh, no. Based on that there, it becomes part of the value of it. They pay property tax on that every year.
What I'm saying is is that this is how much we collected in the way of a fee. It's one time, and that's all they paid.
No, your traffic impact becomes part of the value of the property.
Yes, but the actual dollars that came into the county came in once, and it was right at time zero.
Well, he's saying that the valuation of the property is higher, thus we get higher property tax revenue.
No,
thus
I'm not talking about any revenue. The initial fee that we're talking about right now. That represents a horizontal.
Okay,
line.
Keep going.
Okay, the next line starts right at the intersection at 0-0, and that is a 45-degree line moving up all the way through. Keep going. Okay, so that represents the revenue increase, the revenue that's going to be coming in over time because of sales tax revenue.
Now I guess it's
ongoing versus one.
Property tax.
All right, so that's revenue, right?
This ought to be videoed.
Here's expenses. Here's expenses. Expenses go like that because the expenses for these on traffic. Building roads, social services for the employees that are getting lower wages, so it's a higher percentage that are either on some sort of a form of assistance or otherwise. Exactly. The costs for our citizens is higher here, so there's a sweet spot right in here. Thus, there is an intersection point where you get that sweet spot, but it's not by just saying, okay, well, let's get the people who have the highest revenue coming in, because they also have the highest costs for it.
I know where you got that chart.
From him. I just draw a line.
It came from the Calais Casino.
Calais Casino is a great example of that. That was one of the big reasons people fought the Calais Casino, is they said you're going to create jobs, but you're creating 3,500 really low-paying jobs that create social services.
Modification here. This is next year, the year after. These are years, okay?
Right.
So valuation increases in addition to the sales tax. And next year, so basically what we're doing is we're increasing the slope here. In other words, it would have been this, but our valuation is stepped increase, and then it went up at a higher slope because we're getting valuation extra property tax out of it.
Property tax there.
And we got sales tax. So
this accelerates it. So we get two kinds of income from those stands.
I don't know what it is. I think you just increase
my property taxes.
If you increase my property taxes now, you're
going to have to. No,
so you, but you can't just look at, and I guess what we're
doing. Imagine how significant a 1% tax increase would be.
Commissioner's talking. So stay focused with him. And then, and my issue with it is simply you can't, and you know this, you can't just look at one side of the equation. You can't just look at the revenues. You have to look at the costs as well. Not just the internal costs associated with, you know, doing the permits or building the roads, but also ongoing costs as well. And so you have to look at the cost part of the equation and not just the revenue. Because the sales tax revenue seems like a sexy thing to go after. Like, oh, let's just go after all. Well, then why don't we just have commercial retail? Let's rezone the entire county for commercial retail. We'll just be one big shopping mecca. Two problems with that. First of all, is the services required. Who's the customer? Who's going to buy the goods? And, oh, by the way, we already lose $15 million a year in sales tax leakage to Oregon.
You're winning an argument I never made.
No, I'm not trying to win the argument. I'm just saying we have to look at both sides of the equation.
Yeah, and we're not talking about rezoning anything.
No, but what I'm saying is that you're prioritizing retail.
One segment of the
jobs classification.
No, I'm not prioritizing.
And I'm saying that the opposite, which is we have to recognize the costs associated with that type of employment opportunity, and that the costs are higher, and then recognize that in the breaks that we give, especially for bare dirt. Because on a bare dirt project, we can show you how much more it costs the citizens for developing bare dirt commercial retail versus in what you have, for example, you know, versus U.S. Digital. There is a huge cost differential. And so by not recognizing that at all and just having them equal, we're not recognizing the cost. That's my point. Why I look at the 50% versus 100% when you talk about, and it's still 50% less on than what they'd be paying already. It's still a good deal.
Let me balance that a little bit here. Let's suppose it's a office building, okay? Mm-hmm. The infrastructure is taxed to the max during rush hour, right? That's when you get your bulkier traffic, right? So if it's office building, all those people are going to end up adding peak time during peak traffic during peak hours, and if it's a retail, they're not all going to have all those people rushing to the store at that time. They're going to be evening it out during the day during not peak time. So that is kind of like, think, you compare this to the electricity. Electricity has the capacity that over time they have discounts in Arizona if you run your washing machine during non-peak time. Mm-hmm. The retail is non-peak time business.
That's not true.
Compared to rush hour business.
But you're talking transportation impact fees. You're talking column A.
No, D. Well,
they're all.
If you're looking at building development fees at 150, what do you do with traffic impact fees? The same?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what?
Column D, you guys said.
D is a dog.
D is a dog. Oh. For the building development engineering fees, what I heard was, keep with the 100% waiver on the non-retail.
That's what I said.
I wrote it down, so that's what we're discussing. What about TIFs? What are we doing with waiving
the
TIFs?
The resolutions have always been the same.
Have always been the same for that. So we're talking about, should it be 100%, 50%, or 100% for all, or whatever?
Let's increment our way toward agreement. There's no one that we're already got agreement. So it sounds like we already have agreement for non-retail to go 100% waiver, for column D, for just like we column A.
Yep,
right.
Exactly. That's what you got.
Waiver on transportation impact fee on all.
Yeah, and on the development fees. Right. Yeah. And on development fees.
There you go. You got two votes for that. There.
Yeah.
Good. In other words, wow.
Okay. That's what we already have. That's existing.
But you already have it.
You didn't get anything. We did that. So don't try to take credit for stuff.
We already did that. We just
did. He's already going on to Facebook taking credit for stuff.
He's taking the job.
What he should be saying is, thank you, Commissioner Stewart and Milton, for doing this today.
Anytime you
do
anything good, you
can. I was told that, but I still haven't gotten it. All right, but we've taken out the FTE requirement. That is something that that's something that you weren't 100% thrilled with, though, as far as the FTEs going to zero.
I want Columbia to know I compromised.
Okay, all right. So, but you got two for going, because I agree. I don't think it's about the number of full-time employees. I think it's more about beginning those businesses going, and they'll grow, hopefully.
Okay. So since we have the two ends of the spectrum, does that mean that we wouldn't have a hump in the middle? I assume
no,
we
no,
go
no.
across
so maybe everyone in the middle.
Is not a lot. Not a camel.
We're going to make up everything we lost right
yep.
there.
I'm losing them over here. Marty, you had a question.
Right now, the resolutions we've had in the past is that there's a sunset date on the resolution.
Yes.
And we give 6 months for any of these categories for any of them now, but on this category D, we'd say you have to have your first building permit inspection 6 months, so it'd be 2000.
Is that reasonable?
What it does is it's put your
along.
Money where your yeah. mouth is. You it's commencement of construction and yeah. diligent pursuing of that construction. Kelly brings up a point, which is some people get caught up in federal and state yeah. issues. We can make exceptions to that, but generally, if you're just doing business with a county, and this is about providing employment. You don't incent. I'm gonna get the entitlement and then wait on it. And
right.
Wait on it.
I agree. Move it along.
So you want to do it at first inspection?
6 months.
I'd give it 9.
Yeah.
Okay.
I say that because right yeah. now we go out there tomorrow and say, okay,
so we all want to.
You've got 9 months right now. Yeah. It's gonna take me 3 months to come to conclusion to hire my architect. To get started,
to make sure I can breathe
well,
my dream.
This yeah. is your first inspection, which is
that's really
there's more to come.
Yeah, it's usually the footing foundation inspection.
But you're hearing us. I mean, we want it reasonable, but we still want to incentivize moving forward.
Yeah, right. Okay,
so
that looks good.
If
Nine
that's
months.
Reasonable, God
bless. Okay.
But everything else will be the same, right? So that we're done.
Well, no, we're not done yet.
We're
I want to sweeten the deal a little bit more when it comes to the retail.
Environmental impact.
It's already a sweet deal for
it,
these
it
folks.
It is. It is.
I mean, if you want to actually come to a compromise, think of the general.
Hold on,
Commissioner Medora, go ahead.
Okay. This is. Okay, here's what I'll propose. We can do this for a test.
Is this a motion?
For this year.
There's a proposal.
We don't have motions for that. So, this is a test for this year. It's an experiment. That 50% you see right there, make it 100% for this year. I'll tell you why. Because when that goes to 100% there, we just blew the gates off the press release.
I can go for that in 3 weeks.
So the press release is you're now going to give a giveaway for free from start. You're going to give away millions of dollars to a retail facility, millions of dollars of my tax money. To retail facilities, so they can bring low-paying jobs. That's the press.
That's what you're going to hear.
That's what you're going to hear.
Voters are going to.
You can say it however you want,
you
but
want
that's what they hear.
Subsidize developers one more time.
Yeah, and not only just developers, but developers who are what? They're bringing me. They're going to bring me some a minimum wage job. Thanks a lot. Thanks
the
for
one
nothing.
Percenters.
You know, you guys shouldn't be the ones right. writing that press.
I get that. Trust me. We're asking for you
right
to hear us in that we've been through these battles.
What
was
the scars? I'll take off my shirt.
And so that's why we try to find that sweet spot, that middle ground of saying, look, we want to prime the pump for them, but we're trying to do it in a way that is respectful of both general funds, taxpayers, and the people we want to get in here. Go ahead, Mark.
So I have an idea, and it kind of goes back to what we originally started with, which is like a family wage job. Let's just say, as a pilot, that if you're retail, and you're actually a higher paying retailer, because I think Chuck's Pro pays their clerks pretty dang good, Costco pays their folks pretty dang good,
Winco.
Because you can have an office building filled with secretarial types paying lower
telemarketers.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe as an incentive for retailers that pay higher wages, and they give us some information that, hey, we're Chuck's Produce may be paying
yeah.
family wages.
Well, so here's a thought.
So
I like your idea.
Idea.
So how do you have a new minimum wage for retail and non-retail? What if you were to start with 50? You get 50 if you don't want to verify anything. But if you want to say that you're bringing in, on average, you're bringing in median or above, verifiable median or above on average jobs, then we'll give you 100.
Sounds like a compromise.
I just read the front page Family wage job is $16.23. You quit it.
Well, that was for a single mother who,
That's
what these are going to be.
No, and I'm not talking about family wage because wage is really hard to define. I think you've got to look at median or above because that's easily defined.
You define how you want it.
At least as high as Washington State minimum wage.
Smart Alex.
It's the highest in the nation, man.
All right, you're pondering.
I am pondering because that 50%. I mean, you look at the opportunities we're seeing that retail isn't valuable to us, and retail is really the most valuable sales tax revenue. That's what's going to generate the sales tax revenue. So we're going to get it back faster. That's the economic engine that's going to...
And we will be spending it faster. Yeah. That's the point. That's what I keep saying. The costs are higher.
But it's only once.
It's not to have a customer. It's not the kind of job if you want, like...
Because you all low income.
Yeah, exactly. Income. And they'll all be sucking on us.
It's still
there.
But it's a low income.
Does anybody else have any ideas of what we can do to somehow sweeten the deal on that 50% that somehow...
We just did. So we go 50%. Marty just said it. So we go 50% and then if you're bringing in, on average, median wage or above jobs, we'll kick it to 100.
And that's as a retail operation.
Because then not only
can you bring numbers.
Yeah, so I'm going to just throw out Chuck's as an example. If Chuck's were to say, Chuck's came to us and said, hey, we're 50% because we're a retailer, but hey, we pay better than median wage jobs. Give us 100%. We're going to say, great. Go for it.
Okay.
But they have to share that information. It has to be verifiable.
They'll have to bring it to us the median wage.
We'll have to
tell them. We'll get that.
Okay, I like the idea. I mean, because it's better than I started. But we have to make sure also that it's something that's palatable to them because we don't want to be prying in like the IRS and say we want your records.
So they're going
to
get.
There needs to be some simple way.
I agree. And if they don't want to share any information with us, they still get half off. So it's still a pretty good thing.
But okay, the question is, what information? How do you really implement this in a way that they're going to feel that
we need working. To release staff to go figure
we
that out.
That.
Okay. That's what we're asking.
We can
do
that. We can work with employment
security. We don't have to
figure
that out.
They keep all that data confidential. Yeah. And they can give us. They can give us.
Okay. We did it with the last.
Without the specific.
Okay. So let's just be when they have to be a period of time. It has to be when they first start up, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Just like we have now, you have to give us some employment. Data that you've hired 10 jobs, we can get that from employment security.
Okay.
That's a simple matter. How many people have you hired and kept on payroll?
So when they first start up, the first report that comes in, and it needs to be real, they're not going to say, hey, you get paid at the beginning, but then we're going to cut your wages after that.
That's a messed up.
Taking the loophole out.
That's what happened to you at the Columbia.
We can do that.
You're taking notes.
Kelly can do that.
Good. Well, we can do that as long as...
Yeah, the Columbia wouldn't qualify for 100%.
As long as it doesn't make work here at the
we can get that. Totally agree. All right. You guys, staff. All right. Okay, we're after 4 o'clock.
Good.
We're there. Yeah, you guys are going to work out the middle. You're going to work out the detail of it. You're going to bring it back to us. We're going to crack the wood and keep things moving.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you, Marty.
And if we're going to have a public hearing to implement this, do we have to publish it, what we're going to do ahead of time?
Yes.
So it needs to be defined when?
Like we need to do it this week. No, next week we need to tighten it up because the notice goes out next week.
We get to review that specific, a work copy of the code before that deadline.
Trust.
Trust but verify. Yes.
So who's going to do this? I want to go apply for a job for it.
Trust but verify. The Russian word.
Kelly knows it. Kelly, what's trust and verify in Russian?
Trust but verify.
Reagan's word.
Trust and verify.
It's not is it perestroika?
Yeah. No.
Is it perestroika? I think that's what it was.
So 100% waiver on retail if you're above the median.
Yeah. I got it.
Yeah, you got it. It's all up here. Yeah. Axel's got
baby.
It.
Now you just hit a home run. That's really good.
You do.
That was really good.
And there's no... And the sunset on this is not a period of time. It's a condition. The same condition we already set out.
Yeah, it's on a sun. It's a condition. You get moving. Not the sunset.
We don't know that. You guys just open floodgates.
All right, we're gonna get.
Yeah, but you're gonna get set in your second quarter report, though, right?
Open the floodgate. Financial impact.
We open the gravity.
So
we open the piggy bank.
Yeah.
The floodgates.
We'll let you know the general floodgate.
There you go,
Marty. Quickly,
it's April 10th.
When do you want this to go to hearing?
As soon as possible.
May 7th. May 7th, we have a hearing.
You better get a publication
date. Don't miss the deadline.
Yeah. I'm always picking up your slack. I already got the hearing date.
Yeah, we already got a hearing date. So May 7th, work backwards from that.
You don't have to have 15 days.
No, but we're just doing it real professional.
Okay. Yeah, good. Perfect. We'll look forward to getting the information back from you for the May 7th hearing.
Real professional. We're real professional.
Fiscal doesn't matter.
Thank you. All right, good.
Whoever needs to approve this.
We're, once again, way over time. We're going to move on. Thank you. We got vacancy review, which should be quick, hopefully.
Yeah.
We all got the information from last
week. I gave you all something.
It was last week, yes.
I grabbed this because I don't want you to touch it. It has an automatic setback.
Yes,
boss.
You have yours.
They want to kick me out.
All right.
You gave it to me.
We got like 5 conversations going on here. All right. So you're
first one. Only three people. That's pretty good.
I know exactly. So
I have an emergency one for you to consider today. We have one of our animal control people resign, and we really need. We only have three now.
Come to that last. Let's go with the ones we already have.
Okay. Public Works Operations, Moulton Falls caretaker.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the where they live inside. Yep. Average $10 an hour kind of thing. Yeah. Yes.
The two next ones are Kevin Tyler, Program Manager and Program Coordinator. Mr. Milky had a problem with it. I think I have an explanation.
Those are the ones we heard about today.
Yes. Well,
those are the ones that I'm concerned because we have a new manager soon, hopefully. And I would like to have that person having more involved in
making
picking
decision.
His crew instead of having it all picked for him.
I understand that, but from the standpoint of what we were talking about today, if you want to get people through the doors and through the permitting process, most of them have to go through environmental services work. And that's what he was talking about today is they are bare bones and don't have the staff to be able to do the work that's necessary to process permits. That's what these are for.
I was surprised when I heard him say that because, I mean, there are dozens and dozens of people in that department.
These are the environmental permits for construction.
This is a specialty.
Part of the infrastructure to make sure that they don't come here and then get angry at us because we can't handle the permits.
Right.
So green light for me. Investing in our internal infrastructure
to
meet the needs.
Okay. Public Works Transportation, this is the engineer and the engineer 3. You've talked to Pete about these. You had concerns.
Yeah. We good?
Does it matter? Yeah.
All right. Two engineer positions again. The one.
Explain that.
These are both engineering positions in public works
that they needed for the construction.
They needed for the
crew. Okay. All right. Okay. Yep. We'll gear up. That's
the one
part of the gear up.
We're going to end up with one open FTE spot
in public works
with Pete doing this.
Oh, yes. Good.
And he's going to keep it there.
That's awesome.
This is the emergency. This is the emergency one. We've had an animal control person resign. They're one of our line people. Gets us down to 3. We really need this person.
Look how much money we're going to save if you pick up the animal.
Well, actually, I have something to say about that. When I toured we stopped as the tour of Washougal last week. They had the Humane Society of Washougal, which also covers Camas. Big difference between that one and this on our Humane Society. They don't cover cats. And this is kitty season. Everyone has a little kitty, and cats will have lots of kittens. And everyone's like, $100 and some bucks?
$35.
And we don't have to pick up kittens. That's our policy. We can save ourselves about $1,000 a trip. Where all these kittens are picking up. It's up to us.
I don't know that the cats are optional and only dogs are mandatory.
That's the way that they do it in Washington and Kansas.
Well, you're right.
And it
Let's talk about them.
Yeah, because they want this is when the Humane Society wants to meet with you about the ongoing.
That's on my list.
Okay, can we tie these together? If we're not, because we don't know how many, this is kitten season. I toured the Humane Society here, and they say this is kitten season. And so it's like, oh, we got to pick all these kittens.
well, $1,000 a pop.
So if you don't pick them up, then so then what happens to all the cats? If they go feral and they go running around in people's neighborhoods, and I mean, what happens to them?
Well, that's what we need to find out.
I'm going to take them out where I live and let them loose.
We need to find out because
cats
are very expensive to take care of. Because what, I'll tell you why. Because when I tour the Humane Society here, they have to have they put cats in a small group in a room. I mean, they have these big rooms that hold lots of cats, but they only put a few in there because they can, they're very contagious with what do they call it?
Kennel cough.
What is kennel cough?
Kennel cough.
It's
yeah.
like, what do you call it? Breathing kind of.
Yeah, that's the respiratory.
Respiratory thing. So it's expensive, and it's not good for the cats to put them all in a big group like that. It's not an optimal solution. I say that we get more input before we consider going out there and picking all these kittens.
So
that makes sense.
So that's part of the work session. That would be a good question for the folks who are professionals in the field.
Before we fill this.
No, I really, really recommend you do that. This is gonna slip. No.
Is this to pick up kittens?
No. Yes, and dogs.
Yeah. Well, it's an animal control officer. We're down to three now, and so we have to go on 410s and not work weekends.
And animal control isn't just dogs and cats. They also work with horse populations,
yep.
Other livestock. I mean, you got to think countywide. Animal control deals with a lot of these issues. They deal with wild animal issues, including the coyotes. And so, I mean, it's beyond just what
we would
normally
think. I would
suspect
even if we stop doing kitten pickup, we're going to need this person. And the calls will come to me if we don't.
We cut two
positions here. Because they'll say, what's going on?
In 2009.
Well, we've added one or two back.
Not animal control.
Not in animal control.
Yeah, we did.
No. We added a dispatcher back.
Can we find out, and then we can get back with you after this meeting, so that we at least can talk with Paul Strapelli about this? In the next couple of days.
I tell you what I'd like to do. We do two with one stone, and then would be go out of here with the moratorium on cats until we have a chance to talk
about
it.
That's a change in policy. Can't just do that in board
policy, Commissioner. That's a huge change of policy.
And I'm going to get, that's going to lead to a lot of
calls. I'd rather hold this.
Do that. Just hold this. That way you don't be picking up.
Why don't we each one of us do our homework over the next several days to figure out what it is and check in with Bill, and we can individually give a green light if we feel like it's appropriate.
Okay. And if we don't have consensus, we'll bring it back next week.
Yes, sir.
Because this just popped up, so I know it may seem like an emergency and all, but
we normally hold. Because this is cat season.
That's where we need to find out.
Okay. All right, so that was what we had for old business and staff report stuff.
I have staff
report. Again, I know, it's 4:15.
Commissioners are first.
So,
I have to do three things I have to do with you, so whenever you get done.
There is actually one really easy one we ought to do with the first, and I get it out of the way, because it's important and it's timely. Remember, we passed the park speed, so they're gone. But there's the letter. You want to share that, Bill?
Sure.
And the difference between what as the first letter was that was going to go out and what our policy said.
Look, this is very simple. Very simple. When you amended the resolution, you said basically that if you don't check one of these boxes, if you don't decline the thing, if you don't donate it, if you don't accept the refund, then that's all you get. What the letter they were going to send out that we caught said is, and if you don't return this letter by May 1, we're going to mail you a refund anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So we changed it. What we think is the correct to the amendment is that
if
you check one of these three, please return the letter so that the refund can be processed. It will take a couple of months to process the refunds or donations. A
couple of months? People are going to look at that and say, probably counting on me.
Well,
how about weeks?
That's the nature of what we can do. That's our payable system.
That gives them time to do it.
Couple of months, dude. Your accounts receivable
take
2 months now.
Can we see it? Did you get a copy for each of us?
That's business.
Yes. Okay. Great.
I'm good with that.
I'm good with it.
Yeah, it's simple. All right.
I got it.
Well, that tick sounds good, but I haven't read it, so I just want to.
Well, that's the only change we made.
I think we
the one we read today. Okay.
So if they don't do anything,
we keep the general fund keeps it.
The general fund keeps it, and later in the year they may find these. Send it in, and they could still do it at that point if they want to. Right?
That's a good question, actually. No, it says, please return this letter by May 1.
Well, that's kind of short.
You can make it June 1 or something?
I think we need to make it June or July.
All right, June 1. You okay with June
1? You're like 15 minutes.
Jesus.
This change message will self-destruct.
Change May 1
well,
to
I'll June. Wait for the
June 1.
Correct. I'll wait for the official change.
Okay.
You got the official.
Great official.
Yeah, you're
I think
all
they're saying June 1.
All right, well, any other changes?
I just want to, before I get the green light, I want to be able to read the letter, but...
I will wait till after he reads it, so go ahead.
Yeah,
with
I don't expect to have any objections over it. I just like to be able to read it.
Okay. Well, and feel free, and if you... I'll come back around to you. So, Commissioner Melky, did you have anything you need to do today?
No, all I had was that one facility permit.
Okay, cool. And we got that, which is good. We got... And all I had... You have this AFARB thing. There you go. The request from Mr. Why am I blanking on it? Joe
Levesque.
So from Mr. Levesque was for us to write a letter. What my suggestion might be is that if he's looking for a letter, I told him we can't control WSU Vancouver. We can't control the legislature or Congress. We can ask WSU Vancouver to research his plan to assess the viability of it, and I thought that might be something we can do for him to get him a letter, but it would be us sending a letter to WSU Vancouver requesting that they research that. That's Wait. My only thought.
It's,
I don't know how else to help him.
I'm driving him in my car tomorrow to meet with the dean of public
So you can
affairs
ask him in
at
person.
WSU. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Then we don't even need a letter.
He's good.
Okay.
He's good.
Right.
His solution
good
is a national solution.
I know.
He's talking to a local.
I know.
He's already worked with Ryan Hart. He's good.
Okay. And he will be your next. What's his name from Yakult Corps?
Okay, so that's Joe Levesque. Humane Society has requested that we do a work session with him, especially considering the concerns regarding kitties.
Sure.
All that. All right. Good. We'll do that. I've already got Joe Levesque, and I'm going to hand that out.
I actually
have folders now.
And I met with the chairman of the board here about a week ago or so. Nice guy. Great guy.
Yes. Does good work. Okay.
Are you talking about our chairman?
No. Yeah. No, he's not talking about me. He's talking about somebody else.
He threw me off when he said he was a nice guy.
I know, you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. All right. So, State Washington House of Reps, I just wanted to show that someone responded to us, our Board of Health letter that was saying, please don't further cut the funds that we use to actually do your mandates. Norm Johnson from 14th, I don't know him, but it was nice that we got a letter responding. It was the only one. So that's all I had in my handy dandy folder for today. Commissioner Medora, what other things did you
have? Yeah, I just got one thing. Where we left it, we were talking about a web link, crcfacts.info, that Tom, you were going to look into that and say, is that okay with you? And I assume, have you had a chance to look at that?
You're talking about the CRC thing on our website? I got thinking about that, and I think that we should be a source of information. And I think the CRC project should be on there, but I also think that the CRC info facts, whatever they call
CRC
it,
facts
should be
info
there as well. Because I think that we have that responsibility of being a source of information.
Yeah. For a while there, I saw we took away everything.
For a while,
that was an error. Did you get the word on that?
Oh, no, I didn't.
No.
But thank you for
After our last conversation, what we did is we discontinued the link to the official CRC project site because that seemed to be consistent with the board's thinking.
Didn't CRC have a
But in that operation, the resolution accidentally went to, but the resolution is back. We have on our site the official county action. Matter of fact,
yeah, you have the resolution.
Piece of information, what the county has done.
Yeah, thank you for that.
So there's a CRC facts.
That info?
That CRC people put out.
No. Opponents. It's put out by CRC opponents.
There's the citizen side and there's the promotion side, which is
the promotion side has a site. What site is that?
ColumbiaRiverCrossing.org is the official site.
Yeah.
I think they should both be there.
So here's the issue. So I received an email, I received two of them, from info@crcfacts.info. It says, the team at crcfacts.info, among others, have been presenting information on the financial and physical disruption of the proposed CRC project. That's reasonable and pretty factually based. Related to this, we have attached a CRC developed plan for road closures. Also seems factually based. With these roads closed, other paths into downtown will surely be highly congested. That's assumption. And folks will be seriously deterred to visit downtown. Also assumption, not fact. And it is reasonable to double this closure estimates considering the way mega projects are run and the broad incompetence of CRC planning to date. Those are assertions and assumptions.
By an email, not by a website.
Right, but this is... So I don't have their website punched up, but this is a group, an organization of opponents that are not just promoting of citizens. It's citizens are for and against, but whatever. So a group of citizens who have a website. There are also citizens who have pro sites that also make assumptions and assertions, and you've brought some of those up before, and I totally agree that people play the numbers on both sides of it. But to have, this isn't facts. And there are things on the website that are inevitably not facts as well. I mean, they are assertions and assumptions, and that's fine, and conclusions drawn from partial, and that's fine for opponents or proponents of a project. But from a .gov standpoint, we are held to a higher level of scrutiny of the objectivity of data. And if you don't believe that ColumbiaRiverCrossing.org is objective, then get rid of it. Don't have it on our site. It's an ORG site. Well, it's not a GOP site.
It's
that's
gone.
What the policy says to do.
It's gone.
We have a county policy.
What you're talking about is done.
Gone.
Right. Right. I know. But this is the biggest issue that faces our community. It's the hottest topic that's facing our legislature. And this is something that we need to be able to provide information to our citizens.
What we're doing is a link, though.
Hear me out. The CRC bureaucracy is using our tax dollars to employ two very high-priced PR firms. They are paying lobbyists, lots of lobbyists out there. So what we're saying is if we don't allow the citizens to be able to present their side, that we are giving a monopoly to the promotions of this, and they are not factual, Steve. Even this 364-page document they just published said, right on the first page, 20,000 jobs is going to create. And we know that's factually multiplied by a factor of 10 off. So it is not factual. We need people to do is just simply two things. We add their official site, and we add the CRC fact site. They're both of them, both sides of the coin, presented.
Devastating $5 to $10 billion debt bomb on region. That's the first bullet on the website for crcfacts.info. It's incendiary commentary. And if you believe that, God bless you, believe it. I can use Google. I found that site in 2 seconds using my Google computer here. I didn't need a government website to point me to it and to be advocating for a group that is presenting one side of issues. If you want to present all the sides of it, then cool.
We're trying to do both sides of the coin.
There's not two sides of this coin, though. There's like eight. Because there are a lot of different options and opportunities, and
I get that.
But that's when it's got most of the facts gathered.
It's
and that's the problem. I think that we have that responsibility, especially because this has been going on for 10, 12 years. I mean, more than that, but it really heated. We need to do the best we can to provide that information out there as representing the people or making it more available to them.
We all represent people, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we take the best two places that we recognize and put them up there, and then let other people decide what is right and what is wrong.
They can sort it out for themselves.
Well, and I think this is a bad precedent.
There's no opinion.
Oh, there's lots.
No, it's assumption, but an assumption is a pretty obvious assumption in some of it. But the financial people, the problem is that our own government entity that's been promoting this has a lack of transparency for over 10 years. To the point that they have no credibility left, in my opinion.
And this is consistent with transparency, openness, non-censorship.
No, it's not. No, it's not, because you're censoring one side of it. Then give put it out for the, not for the CRC as a government entity. Put it out for proponents. Why don't you get Identity Clark County? Why don't you go ahead and throw them up there with it? Why don't you throw the people, CREDC, who you took money away from? Throw up those sides of it as well if you want to be open and transparent and not be pejorative. But you're not.
You want to put side up, or you want to put the other side up? Well, I'm suggesting we put one side up on both issues. And I think that the government side would be the best information you can get. And the other, I think, in my opinion, is the info side.
I don't know that CRCfacts.info is the be-all and all for opponents on that. And because, frankly,
I can't find a better one.
One of each.
Yeah, keep it that simple. Anything exaggerated or taken.
You guys do whatever you want. You got two votes for it. It's a misuse of public resources from my perspective, and it sets a really bad precedent. The second we get into our comp plan, I'm going to remember it, and I'm actually going to bring it back to you and remind you that you said, well, the government is trying to promote something, so we need to have the opponents to have a link from our website. Because that's what we do. We actually promote projects. So the Salmon Creek Interchange project, we should have had an opponent site. I mean, for all of those.
Anything taken to extreme?
I said two things.
We're
that's
talking about the biggest project in the history of the state of Washington.
Yeah.
That's taken to an extreme.
This is exceptional.
I don't know of any other project $3 billion.
Viaduct is at least that. It's actually more.
So
up to this point, I mean, I keep by as much as I'm connected. I'm appalled now to find that there's 10 projects off of construction site being built. Everything from office buildings to museums. That's just not acceptable.
Yeah. Now that we found it, they admit it.
Yeah. As far as the use of our public resources and linking from our public website at .gov, I disagree that it is a good use of public resources.
I think it holds both entities accountable, but more importantly...
Well, it doesn't hold them accountable at all. CRCfacts.info gets credibility.
It does, because if they put something up there that's not right, and then someone else sees what's on the CRC site itself, they could weigh that or go in-depth and research it themselves. But both sides were presented.
So why CRCfacts.info? You know all the other sites.
It's the best site I know of.
And who's in, I mean, have you helped with it?
I'm not at all involved in it.
Well, Dick Sohn mentioned it last night and said he's part of the group that's doing it, but I don't know who else is.
There's a lot of citizens involved in it. That's what's really good about it. It's a citizen movement.
So citizen engineers? Citizen planners? I mean, how are they experts that are actually producing information that is to be... If I tell someone, hey, this person has credibility on an engineering project, even though they're not an engineer, it's not appropriate. But whatever, you got your two votes to move forward with that.
Are we done?
With that aspect of it, Bill had a couple things he had to do.
I need you. Three things. Number one, next week, I'll be gone, just want to remind you.
Yes.
Lair, you will have an executive session on Monday afternoon. You have a client privilege email in that regard. It's on the Calvin's lawsuit. So you must read that, please. And please be available for the executive session. We'll be on your
before
calendar.
I go home.
Cool.
Awesome. Number two.
Do you know what time?
I do not know, sir. Okay. It'll be on your calendar.
They were really shuffling
around. Oh, okay.
It will be Monday. Kind of shuffled before you all left on Monday. Sorry, kind of keep you here.
Yeah.
The second thing, and most important for next week, is that Bronson will be here on Wednesday. Well, you're going to have me here anyway, but propitiously. We find out that the city refinancing at the Hilton, we are normally not involved, but we will be involved because of the amendment to the payment agreement will be needed, according to Bronson. Now, there's a very complex...
Go ahead.
Keep going.
There's a very complex system of documents for that, but Bronson will be here to explain it. Basically, the PFD, if you remember how you set it up with the PFD, the Public Facilities District at the fairground, they are your filter for Hilton financing. they have to approve it, and then you have to approve what they approve. That's the way you set it up, so that the PFD is not an independent function. So Bronson will come explain that to you. We'll have the PFD act on Monday. Bronson will come and explain it to you on Wednesday, and we'll put it on the consent agenda for the 23rd.
So probably a refinance,
yeah, to get a
to save money.
Yeah,
get a and we yeah, and we get in a better position. From
yeah, that's probably
so. Good stuff. All right, last thing.
You asked for two things. One is we are making money on the electrical vehicle parking space.
Good. We'll read this.
Hey, what's going on?
How are you doing, Al?
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Board time is open.
Hello, Al.
And we're just about
here. All right. Good to see you.
And here is...
I'm doing good.
Good to see you.
There's the overall... There's the overall parking program for the county.
Cool.
That you asked for. That's all I have.
All right. And we will read this, and this is just the information on the electric vehicle.
We made this spot. Much on 2 meters?
All right.
There you go.
Cool. And staff, did you have anything you had to do today?
I can skip everything but one item. Just get a quick read from you. I got a call from a business in California. They want to do an initiative 502 translation marijuana processing operation here. I wanted to find out what the openness of the board was to that.
Not.
I can guess, but I just want to make sure I'm covering. Okay. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
I'm really curious talking with our with the state moving forward with the liquor board. Having a big hand in this marijuana grow control thing, aren't they setting themselves up to be arrested by the federal government?
They don't know.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. The feds have been.
That is them and not us.
Keep they literally jail talked to the feds, and the feds have not responded to. I mean, they've talked to them, and the feds said, "Well, we're looking into it, but they haven't actually issued."
They did the same thing with the letter we got back.
And what RAG said is that the most dangerous position for us to be in, and for them to be in, is like not knowing. But, you know.
Yeah, and I think they do it on purpose.
Agreed. All right.
I don't think they're going to enforce it, but the thing is, you don't know.
That's the problem. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, anything else from staff?
You guys want me to go to the Fish and Wildlife meeting on Friday?
I think so.
I'll just take a half day then. I'm not going to come all the way from Olympia back down.
That's the Hoof Rod WDFW meeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do you have a copy of the letter that you can deliver to them? Just to, I mean, I know that we sent one, but it'd be nice to have one with you.
Yeah, I do.
All right. Cool. All right. Anything else that we have to do from staff?
Make us proud.
All right. We're done. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.